Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, another edition of Leave It in the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas. 3 hours of boxing talks here on Leave It in the Ring. We got some big fights to talk about from Timothy Bradley versus Manny Pacquiao this Saturday. This past weekend, we got a lot of fights to talk about. We got Latif Coyote, who bit the hand that feeds him with Showtime. He's going to be coming on a little later. We also got the trainer and manager of Marcito Gesta, who's Vincent Parra. He's going to be calling in to speak to us, you know. Notice I didn't mention Gabriel Montoya. He's not going to be coming on today because I was sent a letter, and I know a lot of people are going to be disappointed. I was sent a letter that if I was to have him on, that I'm not going to be no longer part of the money team. And I just can't risk that. I can't do it. So I had to send out a letter to Gabriel Montoya and let him know that he can't come on and stuff because it's going to jeopardize my chance of being able to name myself 97 Rough Mayweather or Leaving the Ring Money Team. I don't know. Anyways, this is your co-host, David Duenas, 97 Rough, and your boy, Gabriel Montoya, the Dark Cloud, a.k.a. the Dark Cloud. And we talk about some venom. You know, let's talk about some venom that's going to be really spit out over here on Leaving the Ring. Really, there's not an agenda. We didn't really book a whole lot of guests. I know we do a lot of roundtables when there's a big fight coming up. And we just thought, you know what? Let's do something a little bit different. There's a lot of things to talk about in boxing. There's a lot of stuff happening to my co-host, a lot of alleged things. There's a lot of questions that are just looming around him. So I thought, this is the perfect chance for Gabriel because he's got a platform to express himself. He's got a platform that he can be able to clear the air. He's got a platform as well to just really kind of give his side of the story. I know he's been on some other radio shows, but this is the thing is that he's my co-host, and he's going to withhold certain things, juicy things, only things that me and him have spoken about off the air here and reveal it to our listeners. What's up, brother? How you doing today, man?
I'm doing great, man. I just got back from almost back to my underground lair. I was at the E3 conference all day at the LA Convention Center, seeing all the latest video games. Got to play against these video game girls who were, like, you know, super hot. They're all dressed like the girls in Tekken. And I almost won. I came a punch away, and I got knocked out in the last round. It was terrible. But I had a great got to meet a bunch of people and, like, a lot of missions accomplished today. So I'm excited to be doing the show, man. And we got, I think, something different for everybody tonight. I know a lot of people want to read the next story that's coming out. And I think I'm going to reveal all, and I'm going to reveal the source of the Mayweather stuff and all that. And, not to disappoint you, I'm not going to reveal. Whether I know or heard or didn't hear or don't know about that rumor about the 3 positive tests, but what I will do if Dave wants me to, I know this piece is coming out of Max Boxing. They've already put out a kind of a teaser for it. I can read excerpts from it, or I can read the whole thing. I think people are still going to go back and read it for themselves because it's 5,326 words. It's a lot of stuff to kind of take in. And it's got an interesting cast of characters, including Keith Kaiser, the executive director of the Nevada State Athletic Commission, Golden Boy CEO Richard Schaefer, myself in kind of a main character role, and what's up, guys? And also, I just got kind of thrown by entering my house, and many, many more people. It should be very interesting. People's reaction to the story and the events surrounding. It's kind of just like, all the stuff that's happening behind the scenes. Thank you. And underneath it and around it, things have been happening with me, why I'm not working with boxing scene anymore. It's going to be that's the other character, Rick Reno. He's one of the main characters. Kind of a foil, if you will, in this one. So he's also a wonderful source of information in the article, and he gets a lot of quotes and information as a source attributed to him. I'm sure he's not going to like that, but hey, I don't like people breaking my confidence. I don't like people trying to attempt to ruin my name. I don't like people making offers and then taking them back under pressure, in my opinion. So I did what writers do. I wrote the truth as best I remember it, see it, and understand it, and I can read it for you guys tonight.
Absolutely. I think that even though it is a large amount of words that are put into this, it's a very well thought out article that does have a web of characters in it that I think a lot of people will have more of an understanding what is going on and what's your position and why these things have kind of came about. So I definitely want to get into that. You know, I definitely want to start talking about that. I think that's why a lot of folks are not only just tuning in tonight to listen to us talk about our blue-collar sport, boxing, but also to hear about the integrity of other folks and the integrity of the sport. You know, when we talk about cleaning up the sport, when we talk about let's get real, let's do something that's gonna shake the world, some folks are all for that. Some folks are ready to jump on that wagon, but when the wheels start turning and it starts going in motion and it's moving, that's when people start pretending that they're on a bus and they look for that string to pull. And we're starting to see that here. We're starting to see that with the movement that you've been on top of. And just really quick, you know, I want to throw in my two cents that, and I'm going to take this back 2 years, maybe no, actually, like 3 years ago, when signing you on to Leaving the Ring, and I'm not going to throw no names out there, and I know people that they still listen to the show, and they're going to know I'm talking about them. I'm pretty sure they're going to either text me or they're just going to hate me even more. But I had a circle of people that were involved in Leaving the Ring, and each and one of them were against you coming on because they couldn't see what I had saw. They didn't agree with it. They thought that you weren't going to add anything to Leaving in the Ring. If anything, they just felt like, he's not going to be able to talk about anything real because he works for a big boxing website. And I knew that there was a diamond in the rough. I knew that you didn't have the perfect radio voice or personality at that moment. But I knew that eventually you were going to find your inner character, and you were going to be able to shine, and you were going to be able to do the things that I had told you in the past. This is what I think that you're going to be able to do. This is what I think you're bringing to the table. And did I know that it was a possibility of being involved with Gable Montoya that I would be put as the actually not even put, there would be an enemy line, you know, an invisible line saying that there's you guys and then there's us? Of course I knew that. But when we talk about integrity, the one thing I've always told Gabriel and the one thing I've always told my writers is that speak the truth and I got your back 100%. And I've proved that over and over to everybody that's been involved in me. I've never fired anybody except for one guy because he ripped me off. He took, you know, and he writes for the Ring now. But everybody else, they've walked away from me. Because when it got steamy and you started to sweat in the room like a sauna, guess what? It's too much.
Well, I think, you know, yeah, I don't think anybody really – it is weird to me, Dave. You know, I got to be honest. Like, I know there's a segment of people that go – oh, he thinks he's Mr. Cool Guy, or, you know, he wears all black and all that, and your nickname for me. And you know me. The bottom line is I just work really hard at my job, and I really like doing my job, and I like doing my job well, and, you know, in any job that I do.
Right.
I didn't go looking, and I kind of say this in the article, that you know, some people are going to say, oh, now he's just talking about himself. He doesn't have anything else to say. And I'm thinking, you know, well, I'll just read you the article if you want to hear it, because it, you know, I think it explains it better than I could. I would probably,
I think you're right. I think we need to just move on to to clarify the correspondence letter, because I think that's what really, it just took a turn. a lot of folks already know you broke two stories. One of them, actually the second one, you contributed to it. Another guy, you know, which we've recognized, that's been on top of it as well. But the main focus of the pressure and being demoted by boxing scene has really came on you, not on anybody else that's been putting out stories or has been following up and putting in the work and has been conducting themselves. And that's the key word. You've been conducting yourself like a true journalist. So let's start off with the correspondence. Let's pick it up from there. Let's move into that, and let's figure out where people misinterpreted and started to write articles. And Pedro, if you're listening, Pedro with the high top socks, you know, always syndicate it, never duplicate it. I got to hear that conversation, too, that you and him, you know, Pedro Fernandez, you and him have.
Oh, my. Let me start there, because I know there's certain people still probably tuning in, and we can tease a little bit that we're going to – that is an article probably nobody will see. You know, I have my name on like, Google search, you know, and or a Google alert. And so – and a few other things. I check around. I make sure that – my name is not being slandered or libeled or however you want to call it. I see what people say about me in the forums. I mean, I'm kind of all over the place. I've lived on the internet for 6-7 years. So
right.
I know it sounds like stalkerish, but it's like you really do kind of plug in and stay there. And I, you know, from my phone to my laptop to whatever, I'm always online and or in line, I guess you should call it. That's the new thing. Somebody said to me at E3, it's not online, you're in line. Yeah, whatever. So, yeah, I wake up this, you know, yesterday, and I see this article by Pedro Fernandez of Ring Talk, and he's written, he's basically, it's like third person, you know, or third party information now. Like, it's a bad game of telephone. You know, Scoop Malinowski took my article, The Correspondence, didn't understand what I was doing, misread it, got all excited, oh my God, fully tested positive 3 times, and this guy knows. And so he quoted it as if I'd said that, and that's just not the truth. So he confused poor Pedro, who used to be a journalist and now is just I don't know what. And Pedro wrote an article trashing me, giving me lessons in journalism. You know, look, kid, you know, that kind of thing. And he's gonna go to jail and he's gonna have to eat crow big time. And I'm sitting there thinking, you idiot. You didn't even read the first thing. You didn't read The Correspondence. You just read Scoop Malinowski. So I got a hold of him through various channels. I said, you need to call me or, you know, we're, meaning you, are going to have a serious problem. And he got on the phone and I went at him.
Did you get all Tony Montana on him? You're like, do you want to go to war? Do you want to go to war?
Yeah, I kind of did, actually, yeah. So I actually kind of just told him, you don't want to go to war with me. I'm the last person you want to make an enemy of. And you're absolutely wrong. I'm armed with the truth. And you need to take it down, and you apologize. And he was like, wait a minute, like, calm down. I'm like, no, this is a monologue. This isn't a dialogue. You take it down, you apologize, you retract, or you've got problems, and you don't want to lawyer up against me. You know, what was funny about it was that he didn't ask if I was doing an interview with him. I was just railing on him and threatening, you know, all kinds of things, to sue him, not to get physical. That's pointless. Although I was pretty shaking mad when I read the whole thing. It takes a lot to piss me off, and he had me pissed off. And so he took it down immediately, and he retracted. But what he did was he basically just took our whole conversation on the phone, which I never told him were on the record. There was several things he divulged that I was holding for myself. But, you know, since he did it, I kind of was like, well, I guess I'm going to go all in. And I spent all yesterday and then, like, I slept like midnight to 3 a.m. and I woke up and I finished the article by 11 o'clock this morning and sent it off to the editor. It was a good 20-hour stretch somewhere in there of writing and remembering and looking at my notes and all the things. That's really it. And so, the article's finished and it's out. It's called For the Record. I don't think it's out yet. I don't think the link has landed. That's kind of an intro into it. If you ask me something else, I think my mind's kind of racing.
I just crack up because, like I told you before, you know, mentioning my little speech really quick, I knew that some folks were going to get either scared or hurt and start tweeting. And of course, that's what always happens and stuff. But you know, when you're guilty, you feel guilty about something, you're gonna actually jump on the wagon about it. But I want to go. Let's go with the correspondence, because that's the past. I really don't, what I just mentioned, I don't care about none of that. I want to talk about what is going on right now, and I think a lot of folks want to know what's going on with that correspondence article, with Golden Boy and his, and the lawyer sending you a cease and desist letter, and basically putting words in your mouth, and just really kind of trying to put your name in the mud.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I guess I'll try to find that section. You know how I do. I start talking at a subject, and I'll move over to something else, and I'll come back to it. I challenge the reader to kind of keep up and to keep track. You know, you have to kind of read every one of these drug stories in order to kind of get the full picture. You know, there's I guess I can say it because it's the episode, it will be coming out. HBO will be picking up this story and doing something on it. I believe 16th. I don't have all the details, but rest assured, those people seem to agree with what I'm writing. You want me to just read it, Dave? You want me
go
into it?
Yes, go
right.
into it.
This is called For the Record by Gabriel Montoya of MaxBoxing.com. Writer's note. This business is all about trust. A source will drop something to you and not always want credit for it. So you protect that. You give the one thing you're in control of in this world. You give your word. You will honor their trust. It should be unspoken. It used to be a point of pride keeping your word. For me, being able to keep a secret and protect the source is a personal point of pride. My father gave me this last name, passed on to him by his father. Keeping my word is an integral piece of preserving the Montoya's name, the Montoya name's good standing. I value that above all things. In many ways, I have a lot to learn about being a boxing writer. I'm still a mere fledgling in the grand scheme. Try sitting next to Steve Kim in a fight and watching who texts or calls him before, during, and after. Right now, I'm learning to be an investigator of not just what punches were thrown and why, but something deeper, more insidious. I didn't ask to be the PED guy. It kind of just happened. A famous and more experienced person than me told me recently, a few weeks back in May, when all boxing hell had broken loose with Lamont Peterson and Andre Berto testing positive for synthetic testosterone and nandrolone traces, respectively. He said, "When this is over and you stop writing for a while, the others won't have anything to write about. At some point, when that happens, you keep things rolling and keep breaking stories. You will become the story." The event
I like
May
that.
2012,
I like the change of voices that you're doing there.
Well, thank you. I have a little theater background. The events of May 20. No, that's not Bob Arum. The events,
right.
Events of May 2012 and the week leading up to Sunday, June 3rd, prove that person correct, I think. I don't want to be the focus of this. For me, the whole thing is about fighter safety. The health and safety of each combatant is of the utmost importance to me. I want them in the best shape, with the best, most even chance to win. I've written about mismatches and performance-enhancing drugs. I've written about robberies. I have one coming up on Maurice Harris that I've been too busy to write. My track record is proven in this area. Like I said, I don't want to be the focus of the combat sports drug war. I just want to get at the truth, put all those cards on the table, and have a safer, cleaner sport for everyone involved. But for this article, hopefully only this article, I get to be a main character. Please indulge me, and I will tell you a few stories that end with more questions than answers. Gabriel Montoya, Los Angeles, June 2012. This has several sections, this article. The first is called The Clarification of the Correspondence. The above link, and I give the link to the correspondence, I'll tweet that out now. If you're following on Twitter, I'm at _ Gabriel Montoya. And it's an article that you should take a look at. It's very simple to understand, unless you're Scoop Malinowski or Pedro Fernandez.
Huh.
The above link was the Monday night going into Tuesday lead on MaxBoxing.com, May 29th. It capped a banner month for boxing that saw not one, but two fighters test positive for banned substances, and two highly anticipated rematches fall by the wayside because of it. May 2012 could end up as the month boxing stopped hoping to clean itself up through extra drug testing and started doing just that. The correspondence has drawn a lot of assumptions. Allow me to clarify. The story was posted on MaxBoxing.com around 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Monday evening, May 28th. a lot of assumptions have been made about what are essentially two PDFs of an email sent to me by Golden Boy Promotions lawyer Jeffrey Spitz and an email response sent from me via my iPhone hours later. As you can see in the link, the only words that are written outside of those two PDFs are, in quotations, my response later that day, dot, 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 dot. I screwed up the ellipses. Before we get into events surrounding that story's fallout, let's take a look at the contents of the emails. The first allegation made by Golden Boy to me was that they had been, quote, been advised that you have been asserted, that you have asserted to the Nevada State Athletic Commission that you have received information that Golden Boy attempted to obtain an agreement from Voluntary Anti-Doping Association, read VADA, not to disclose a potential, quote, B-sample test until after the tested boxer participated in the scheduled fight. You further allege that Golden Boy had entered into an agreement with the United States Doping Agency, USADA, which contained such a provision, end quote. That is allegation number one. Is
right.
It true? Did I ask questions to various parties regarding information I received from various sources regarding the possibility that such a clause existed? Yes, I did. But not with the specifics Golden Boy's lawyer provided in the letter. I didn't talk about B sample, it was just positive, and it was something that I'd heard. The day I read in this letter, the phrase inadvertent use exemption is, to my knowledge and memory, the first time I ever heard that phrase used. If anyone can produce a tape or written proof of me using that term, I'd be glad to listen to it or see it and stand corrected.
Now, that word, let's go back to that word. Let's go back to that word, what they were using, because, you know, you just said right now, you've never heard that word, you've never seen that word, and there, that's what we're talking about a little earlier, how they were putting words in your mouth. Where do you think they were trying to go with that?
Well, I think, I don't know. That's kind of where I'm going right now. I never used that term. When I asked Keith Kaiser, well, this is the here we go, next paragraph. It does answer your question, actually. Who did I ask about this? Not many people. One of those people is Nevada State Athletic Commission Executive Director Keith Kaiser. The conversation was in confidence. We both said that, as it obviously was of a serious nature. I asked him to not mention my name in conjunction with this information. When I received that legal letter, his name was the first that came to mind.
Right.
I left him an admittedly angry voicemail demanding to know why he had betrayed my trust. Mr. Kaiser has yet to return my call.
Let me stop you just there right there. In the voicemail, when you say admittedly angry voicemail demanding to know why he had betrayed your trust, what was left? I mean, you know, because...
What did I say?
Yeah.
He has my number. We've communicated. And actually, the last time we communicated was when the Berto thing... Not the Berto thing. It was the Peterson thing was breaking. And I emailed him, and I have the email, and I said, can you call me at your earliest convenience? His response was no. Keith Kaiser.
And you know what's funny? Just to clarify this and all that, you guys were I wouldn't say buddies, but you guys were friendly. You know?
Friendly with me. I mean, we were cordial. Like I am with any.
Yeah, story. Very cordial. That's the word I would choose and stuff. It was not, and there was no animosity. There was not, you know, I don't want to speak to this guy.
There was a little bit of that because of my article, the 6-to-1 ratio.
I remember that. I remember the shot of Vegas. Right.
Yeah. Well, because there were two. There was the article I did on Chavez Jr., and I mentioned it. I said, if you want to, you know, because of the 6-to-1 TE ratio, and it was just a little tiny paragraph, said, you know, you might as well have a sign that says if you want to cheat at testosterone or cheat on drugs, go to Nevada. And he got mad at that. And so I apologized at the top of the New York-Nevada and the 6-to-1 TE ratio story on Max Boxing. But then at the end, Dick Pound, Richard Pound, so nobody giggles, is, and I'm getting kind of sick of the jokes, folks, on Twitter. That's his name, deal with it. He actually said that exact quote back to me. He said, he actually said the same quote to me. He said, if I was writing a headline, I would call it, if you want to cheat, go to Nevada, or something to that effect.
Right.
He was like, it mirrored exactly what I said, and so I put it in there. Keith called me immediately the next morning. I wanted to make him wait for a couple days. I wanted to see how the story would land. There's a promoter now, Ludabella, that won't call me back. And I have a feeling it might have something to do with that. I'm not really sure why Lou doesn't want to call me back. But I didn't add him in the article. But you know what? Lou, you're a stand-up guy. So am I. I've
right.
called you a couple of times. For some reason, Rick Reno alluded that there was another promoter. I'm pretty sure it's you because he's terrible at masking who he's talking about. give me a call, man. I ain't got no problem with you. You're a straight-up dude. You should come on the show or you should call me back.
Right.
I'm tired of outing people for being shady or acting shady. Why so shady? So
yeah.
Let's just jump into this paragraph. So he's yet to return my call. Now, as we enter Rick Reno. According to Rick Reno, owner of BoxingScene.com, and this writer's former employer, from May 18th, 2012 to June 7th, 2012, the shortest job I've ever had. I think the only thing I've done in my life shorter than working for Boxing Scene was when I was a Boy Scout for 3 hours. Kaiser told him personally on the phone that he was the one who called Golden Boy and told them all about my inquiries. According to Reno, Kaiser feels I'm a puppet for Dr. Margaret Goodman, who is the president of Nevada. He also
right.
feels, according to Reno, that I'm also the puppet of former Balco owner and anti-doping activist Victor Conte. Also, according to Reno, Golden Boy CEO Richard Schaefer feels the same way, too. Just feel the love pouring out, just cleaning up boxing, one damaged reporter at a time. In fact, the first time I contacted Schaefer regarding the Lamont-Peterson positive test, the first thing Schaefer said to me was, and I quote, "I know you were friends with Dr. Margaret Goodman," and in parentheses, a name I'm not going to reveal, "but I will talk to you." A weird thing to say. At the time, it seemed odd since I had yet to connect the two people he met in the way he was implying. It also seemed odd that he would choose two random people I know through boxing to mention. Yes, I know both these people. In truth, I've never met Dr. Goodman in person. I've interviewed her on a number of occasions. We don't do lunch. We don't grab drinks. We're not BFFs. We don't call the chat idly. Ours is a friendly but professional relationship. I call her for interviews or information because the subject of PEDs, testing, and the health and safety of fighters are important to me. Dr. Goodman has knowledge on all three of these subjects. Since Peterson first tested positive, Dr. Goodman and I have been in contact just a few times. In fact, I learned from several sources, none of whom were her, that she had been served a similar legal threat from Mr. Spitz.
Let's go back to that really quick. I can't believe that they served her as well. I mean, go for it.
Rick Reno obtained the documents through what he refers to as, quote, "a massive spy network." It is a public interest to know who sent him the legal letters sent to my email and Dr. Goodman's.
Wow.
I found it very strange. I like to think that I have a kind of a nice network, and I'm really good at keeping secrets. Never screwed anybody.
Right.
Never will, never have. And yet, within days of knowing Rick Reno, man, this guy knew my business. Like, you know, he knew what color underwear I was wearing that day, it would seem. You know, it was kind of bizarre to me. And it really, you know how private I am.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. It made me really nervous. I was warned about it before I started working for him, that you can't tell him anything because that you don't want the rest of the world to know. And that was a direct quote from someone that knows him very well. And, you know, another quote about him was, you know, "the problem with Rick is that he won't tell you your business," as in, you know, who's talking about you, "but he'll tell everybody else your business."
Just really quick.
I found that out the hard way.
Just really quick, because we're getting a lot of tweets, we're getting a lot of emails, and people hitting me up on Facebook. I won't answer you on Facebook. I will answer you on air. Okay, and this is for Travis Summerson. Just to clarify this. Yes, we were with a Boxing Scene a long time ago. No, Boxing Scene didn't fire us. So there's no bitterness there. I quit Boxing Scene.
Mm-hmm.
I never broke it why we did, why we left, but there was a reason why I walked away from the Boxing Scene deal. So this throwing this out that we're just being bitter because that we were let go a long time ago, dude, get your facts straight. If you don't know the full story, stop emailing me and trying to trash what we have done and what we've done in the past because you're clueless. You know, and when Gabe talks about being personal, I'm a very personal person. I don't talk about – I don't try to badmouth anybody, you know, but there's some folks out there that sometimes need to be put straightened up. They need to straighten up a little bit. You know, if you're being crooked and you're all about cleaning up the sport and you're all about doing the right thing, well, do the right thing. It's plain and simple.
And you kind of watch people. People haven't – what the hell?
And I saw Chris Herrera.
Hey, let me handle an editorial thing 1 second.
And I saw Chris Herrera tweet talking about you weren't one of them. I didn't say you. So I saw your tweet. I didn't mention your name or whatnot. But we're gonna get back into boxing pretty soon. But like I said, a lot of people wanted to hear what was going on with Gabriel Golden
so
Boy boxing. I know. This is not even. We're just barely chipping at the iceberg right now. There's so much more that is involved. We got to get though. A little later, we're gonna get to Timothy Bradley, Manny Pacquiao, the undercards, last weekend's fights. But let's continue with this here because, like I not only do I find it very interesting, I do find it somewhat comical.
Funny.
To a point. Yeah, but not so comical. No, because this is happening to one of my good friends. So go ahead, brother.
I tell
Keep
you what, I feel a lot less stressed out today than I did yesterday. Let's see. Okay. It was a public interest to know who sent him the legal letters sent to my email and Dr. Goodman's. It makes me kind of creeped out. Was asking Kaiser, or anyone for that matter, about the possibility of this clause, the right thing to do. As I stated in my response, it is the role of a journalist to pursue stories that involve matters of public interest. According to Reno, Kaiser felt legally obligated to discuss it with Schaefer, who, according to Reno, claimed I had never brought that question to him. Schaefer felt I should have. This is relayed to Reno in what he described to me as an angry rant by Richard Schaefer over the phone sometime between May 31st and June 1st about me following the release of the correspondence. The words that he used to describe me are not fit for print. In fact,
wow.
I did ask Richard Schaefer, as well as Golden Boy employee Bruce Pinko, who's in charge of all the PED testing negotiations, about this very issue on two separate occasions. Surprise! At the Los Angeles press conference to announce the Mayweather-Cotto fight, I asked Pinko about it, the details of which are in my story, Floyd Mayweather and the New Wave of Drug Testing in Boxing, posted on Max Boxing the Tuesday of the Mayweather-Cotto bout, and I provide the link in this article. From the article, there is also the question of when USADA would release the information. I asked Bruce Pinko of Golden Boy, who is a key player in negotiating the anti-doping test contracts for their fighters, what would happen if someone tested positive? Now, just jumping out of the article, you have to remember that this is around the time that Ryan Braun had tested positive for a synthetic test.
Right.
And they used carbon isotope ratio testing to catch him, something that I've talked about, and I think I've talked about it on the show while we were doing
right.
The show. It was a Thursday.
Yeah.
So It was on my mind. It wasn't like I'm going around going, these guys are dirty, and I don't like what they're doing, and I'm going to get them. All this stuff, just I kind of led to it naturally. That's what's so weird about it. So I said, what would happen if someone tested positive? Would they wait to release the results or cancel the fight? I would love to answer that, said Binko, but that is something you would need to check with them about. Who is them? I asked. Who have you talked to? Asked Binko. I indicated I had tried to talk in depth with the Mayweather camp and to USADA, to no avail, at which point Mr. Binko reiterated that I had to get, quote, their clearance. It was never discovered who they were.
Who were they?
Following Lamont, I guess it may have been...
Was it the man with a cape? What is it, the man in the cape and a man on the mask? I mean, it's just...
The guy with the black hat? I mean,
yeah, was it the guy with the black hat?
All this stuff. It's his job to handle it, so I don't know... I mean, maybe you thought I needed to give clearance. It wasn't like I was saying, hey, I need to know the results of their samples. I was saying,
right.
If shit goes wrong, are you guys ready? And apparently they weren't. So following Lamont Peterson's positive test, I called Schaefer initially that first day to get a statement. We had what I would describe as a heated but productive conversation. He was very emotional. He was particularly angry that he was not informed of the positive A sample, and was even more upset that when the B sample was tested weeks later, he was not informed by VADA but by Mr. Kaiser. He claims that regardless of the allegedly unsigned agreement between his company and VADA, they had an obligation to inform him of the positive test results. VADA claims they did their job, which is to find banned substances in a fighter's system should they exist. That issue will likely be cleared up in court. The second time I spoke with Schaefer regarding the positive test of Peterson and its fallout was later that week. This time, Schaefer was much calmer. I told Mr. Schaefer that something was bothering me. He seemed very upset with VADA over their handling of the positive tests results. Considering that Golden Boy had now been involved in 7 fights with extra testing, 3 from USADA, 3 from VADA, and one handled locally for the Devin Alexander Lucas Matisse fight. It seemed unusual that he'd be so upset that someone had finally tested positive and a fight had to be canceled. What is the difference between your contingency plan with USADA and the one you have with VADA, I asked. Mr. Schaefer did not answer the question, and was what started as an amicable conversation became very tense.
What do you mean he didn't answer? Like, did he just stay silent with you? I mean...
No, he just, like, sidestepped it. You know, he started talking about something else. He didn't really want to go into it, and he got kind of angry about the whole... He got like, angry, like, all over again about...
Right.
And you got to remember that he has asked me, you know, I know you're friends with him, with this
right,
person,
right.
And with Margaret. So, like, he's already thinking of me as kind of...
Yeah, his guard was already up. His guard was ready
up.
Yeah,
even though he kind of, like, told people on Boxing Scene that I'd hipped him to what testosterone replacement therapy was, he didn't know what carbon isotope ratio testing was until I told him and explained how VADA was able to catch Peterson and why...
He didn't know what boxing was.
Yeah, he didn't really know what it was, what platform he was standing on. I'd
right.
say that.
Yeah.
I finally asked an increasingly angry Schaefer, I just want to know what would happen if Berto Ortiz tested positive. And I have to make this clear. He was angry. I was just asking questions, and I wasn't, like, badgering him. I wasn't, like, hammering the witness. I was trying the best way to, like, keep a smile on my face on the phone and, like, ask this question. And I felt like we were in the safety tree. You know, he had praised me in Boxing Scene and said, you know, I told him about testosterone. And he seemed more amenable to talking to me the second time because he figured this guy knows what he's talking about. But, so I asked him, I just want to know what would happen if Berto or Ortiz tested positive. The contract agreement that was not signed in the Peterson case, have you fixed that problem with VADA, with this VADA-tested fight? What would happen if Floyd or Cotto tested positive close to their fight the way Peterson did? Schaefer's response was to tell me if I asked that question again or mentioned VADA to him again, he would hang up and never take my calls again. It's in the hands of our legal department now. At the time, I didn't understand what he meant by that comment. I said, okay, I'm not going to ask you that question again. Have a nice day. And we bid each other a nice weekend as it was Friday. Now, here's the part that everybody wants to hear. The second and third allegations by Golden Boy to me. Quote, you have also claimed that, one, Golden Boy entered into a contract with USADA for testing in connection with Floyd Mayweather's fights, which provided for an inadvertent use exemption that would permit a positive test to be excused if the result of inadvertent use, semicolon, and part two, that Mr. Mayweather had tested positive on three occasions, which were excused under the inadvertent use provision. Quote. All right. Now, it should be noted that when I asked Keith Kaiser if he had heard of a clause that would hold the result of a positive test until after the fight, that is how I described it. That simply. At the time, Kaiser kept asking me, did you hear that from Dr. Goodman? And he kind of laughed and then proceeded to assume I had. I told him no repeatedly, but he didn't seem to believe it. And in my opinion, he did not seem to want to believe it. Later, I was told by multiple sources that he and Dr. Goodman do not get along, dating back to the mid-2000s when both worked for the Nevada Commission.
Right.
It should also be noted. Yeah, I know that now. I didn't know that then. I mean, a lot of these people are, like, talking to me like I've got I'm coming into the conversation with the same problems they have with each other. You know, my name is Paul. That's between y'all. I'm just trying to figure out this story.
Exactly.
It should be noted that when I asked Keith Kaiser if he'd heard of a clause that would hold the It should also be noted that Dr. Goodman, who for years, and actually I got confirmation from the editor-in-chief tonight of Ring Magazine. It should also be noted that Dr. Goodman, who for years wrote a column in Ring Magazine, was recently fired from that publication very quietly.
Wow.
Golden Boy Promotions owns that publication.
Yeah.
Her columns were generally on important issues, such as fighters' health and safety. No official word has been given, and Dr. Goodman has yet to inform me of this. Again, multiple sources informed me of this over the past few days. One can assume, in my opinion, that she was let go due to Golden Boy's current issue with VADA. For the record, I'm just saying this out of the article because it's already going to print, and I'll put a correction or something in it later. They did not give me a reason why she was let go. However, it should be noted that Ring Magazine has let go a lot of staff as of late, as they are retooling the publication. The allegation that I was running around spreading the rumor about Floyd Mayweather potentially testing positive on three occasions is interesting. I will not reveal if I have heard this rumor before, I read it in the letter, or not. Rather, I'm going to ask these questions. Where did Golden Boy hear this rumor? And from whom did they hear I was spreading it?
Right.
All week long, since the correspondence was released, there has been rampant speculation. Readers have asked me to produce the article where I accused Floyd of testing positive 3 times. The truth is that the article does not exist. The first place that I know of where the words, quotations, Floyd Mayweather, quotations, tested positive on 3 occasions, and, quotations, inadvertent use provision, appeared together is in the letter Golden Boy Promotions lawyer sent to me. So why did I print it?
So Floyd should really honestly go after them. They're the ones that did the assumption, not you. Oh, wow. How funny is that?
So, and we don't even need to really get into the fallout. I'll finish this section done in 3 short paragraphs. Why did I print it? A few reasons. One, I believe in freedom of the press. I don't believe the questions I am asking are wrong or inappropriate. I don't approach my job with malicious intent. Because of Floyd Mayweather, Golden Boy now sits willingly on a platform of cleaning up boxing through better testing. That does not make them exempt from scrutiny. Nor does it make Mr. Mayweather or any athlete who decides to do extra testing free from scrutiny. In truth, what Mr. Mayweather or any other boxer undergoing extra testing is asking for is to be put under even greater scrutiny than any other boxer in the sport. True Olympic-style testing, OST, is conducted 365 days a year with the possibility of being tested at any time during the 24-hour clock. USADA and VADA's boxing testing programs last roughly 14 to 16 weeks during training camp and just after the fight itself, with the rest of the year untested for participants in boxing's version of OST. Questions should be asked. Proof should be given. In the world of anti-doping, transparency is key. The second reason I released that letter is that I honestly felt the need to protect myself by being transparent about what was going on behind the scenes. It was not released in order to ruin Mr. Mayweather, USADA, or Golden Boy's reputations. There was no malice in releasing that information. The letter sent by Mr. Spitz, in my opinion, was an attempt to bully a member of the media into silence. We now see the results of that attempt. In light of the events surrounding this story on Winky Wright versus Peter Quillman and their aborted extra testing under USADA, I made my final decision to release the correspondence. I stand by that decision, and I provide a link to that story. That's the end of the first section.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh. I think I can actually release this information. Victor Conte will be on the June 16th segment of the new show, The Fight Game, with Jim Lampa on HBO. The piece will air just after the Chavez Jr. fight. He's going to be talking about VADA, USADA, and the rampant use of PEDs in boxing.
Hey, yeah. I want to take that's softballs or hardballs in that show. I'm not sure. You know, I haven't made up my mind.
Oh, I think it's going to be hardballs. I trust Jim Lampley to bring it on this issue. I really hope he does.
You know, and I've been holding on to Jim Lampley's email for quite some time. I've spoken to him in the past, and he's said, "Yeah, I'd love to come on and speak to you guys," but you know, I didn't know how to fit him in. And if he does hardball it, I would love to bring him on and talk to him a little bit about that. Gabe, really quick, I want to patch in a caller who's a kid that you actually introduced me to. And we brought him on to Leave in the Ring. You put him underneath your wing, and you've kind of prepped him as a writer, and you've continued to educate him in how to be a journalist. Josh wants to talk to you just a short bit.
Hey, awesome, bring him.
Josh, what's up? Hey. You're live right now.
Hey, what's going on, Dave? Hey, man, what's with the kid comment, man? That's twice now I heard you call me a kid. But anyways.
Get used to it.
Hey, Gabe.
Up a nickname.
I know, right?
To the kid.
Gabe, I just got an email. I just got an email from Golden Boy. They said that I can't hang out, learn from you, have drinks with you anymore, man. So what's up with that? I guess I can't do that, dude.
Well, sorry, man. You're going to miss some good after parties tonight for you three.
Yeah. Or what's that? We can't go to that Irish place and get some happy hours over there.
You know, and the thing is, it's funny to me it's weird, and it's the one question actually I don't ask in the piece. I ask a lot of questions at the end. Why doesn't? I think this is a good question. I've had more people ask me that think, like, you know, dudes that I just don't even know.
Right.
Like, hey, man, did Floyd test positive? Yeah, I'm telling you. Like Pedro, after
exactly.
He wrote that slam piece on me, in the middle of it, he's like, so did he test positive? Like, why would I trust you to make me a sandwich, much less tell you, like, you know, whether or not I know something or not? Like, come on, man.
I know.
You know, the Birdo thing, like the Watt Peterson thing, I didn't tell a soul. The Birdo thing I told one person, and that person kept my confidence, and they've earned it. That's it. I'm not going to tell people what I know or what I don't know. And I don't think it would be fair for me to say, hey, I've heard this or that, until I can prove it. I don't try to be that, like, tease guy, you know?
We have been told stuff in confidence of, you know, this is what I've heard. And I mean, Gabe, I mean, let's be honest. We have been told a lot of stuff, and we have never thrown it over the air because we don't have proof. You know, I mean, I can think of a time where we were out somewhere, and I know what you're talking about. You know, I know you know what I'm talking about. We're having breakfast, and we're hearing some stuff, and we're just looking at it like, are you serious? You know, but really quick, because there are fans on.
That would
take
the cake.
Right, right.
That would,
if we could reveal that one, huh? I mean, we'd really be in trouble and stuff. Hey, Josh, I'm going to put you on hold really quick, bro. All right? Just stay on hold.
Josh, we're going to do shots at some point, and I don't care what the consequences are.
Hey, kid, we're going to take shots. Don't worry about it.
Oh, no.
Let's pass it to Fight fans, just really quick, because there are Fight fans that have some questions. They want to ask particular questions with you and kind of find out a little bit more information, in their side. Avery, who wants to talk PEDs here on Leaving the Ring. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. What's up?
Good,
what's up,
bro?
Man?
How you doing?
Hey, you know what? I've been a fan of boxing since I was about 6 years old, and you know, the last couple years, man, this whole, you know, performance enhancement drugs I think it's destroying the sport. It disgusts me, and I really do actually believe it's a big problem in the sport of boxing. I'm a UFC fan too. I'm an NFL fan. I believe half the athletes and UFC and NFL are on performance enhancement drugs too, and like I said before, man, it really depressed me and it really disgusted me to know that this is going on. And, I mean, you can't really prove it, but just, you know, knowing that guys are cheating to get that extra edge is baffling to me, man.
Well, that's the thing. There is a way to prove it, and that's the epic of it, that there is a way of proving it. But and that's why you know, my co-host is where he's at the moment, because revealing the proof of – there is a system of finding out if guys are doing things that they shouldn't be doing, you know,
right.
or I mean, and let's be honest here. When it comes to Birdo, Gable has broken the story of this was not a guy necessarily cheating. Even with Lamont Peterson, this was not a guy necessarily cheating. They asked for a second testing. They asked for an extension of testing, and this is what we found out. What is the truth is that if these fighters or promoters had it with the caveman testing, you would have never known anything about this, you know? And
Right.
So,
and that's the argument I have when people say, well, this guy's never, he's never failed a drug test. I mean, really? There are a lot of guys out there who haven't failed a drug test, but
right.
I mean, you know the life, I think
people,
the
next time they bring that up, next time somebody's like, you know, they get to that, they fall into the trap of, well, Manny won't take the test, and Floyd's taking the test, and it's just an ignorant series of catchphrases. Next time somebody brings it up, ask them the simple question. When did Nevada start doing drug testing for PEDs? And they won't be able to tell you. And it was in the 2000s.
Sure.
I believe 2002 or 2004. I think it was 2004. Think about it. That's only 8 years ago, dude. Think about how many careers went through Nevada, you know? I mean, and, you know, it is. Like, one dude was like, dude, why are you – this is a guy in the gym who's a fighter and I spar with. And he goes, why are you, like, you know, why do you care? Why are you trying to even stop it? Like, it's part of the culture. Everybody does it. And,
Yeah, he's right.
You know, but don't you think on some level we already kind of do legalize it and regulate it? 4-1 and 6-1 is a way of saying like 6 times greater than normal and 4 times greater than normal. I know some athletes probably have high TEs, you know, high testosterone levels or whatever, but I mean, if we had a more regimented system, you know, if we had carbon isotope ratio testing across the board, maybe we could lower the TE allowance. But we would always know if a guy was like spiked and like 5-1, you do carbon isotope ratio testing and you go, oh, is it your testosterone or not? And then you know, oh, he's juicing or he's not. It just seems so simple to me. But they try to do this HGH testing, which I just think it is the biggest red herring in drug testing. I really do. They always try to sell it to the NFL and to MLB. And I know those guys use it. They're not really using it for what you think they're using it for. So to me, and the test isn't known as being the most reliable. There's a couple tests. It's one out of Sweden. I forget where the other one's from. They're not considered to be like high. I mean, they're high science, but they're not like carbon isotope ratio testing, which I've been told by a couple people has had no false positives. Go with that one. And then when you catch it, add the TE ratio urine test and use it the way they use CIR now. But then you can find out how much was in his damn system. But the way they're doing it is they're waiting for somebody to be stupid, and then they'll try to be smart.
Yeah, they're trying to catch guys off guard.
That doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, the deterrent. If you know that the number one test, like if you know that stealing would kill you, you probably, it would be a bigger deterrent to not steal than it is right now.
Right.
And with drug testing, it's like, well, we might catch you if you have an elevated TE or if USADA, quote unquote, decides to strategically test you with TIR. You know, I don't even know what that is. There's a couple guys that think I've been silent on it because I got trumped by USADA. Statements and press releases are not facts. They're not test results.
Yeah.
They're not anything. There are statements and a press release. You know,
right.
I mean, it's like when Golden Boy announced how many sales it was the Ortiz-Mayweather fight did. And you looked on the press release, and not one place did it say HBO. It was not an official press release, but all the Floyd guys ran with it. See, Manny doesn't sell as well as Floyd. And my boy makes $85 million because Floyd throws that number out. Alex Ariza parroting him like an idiot on Twitter.
Hmm.
People don't look for facts. I like facts. They're facts.
Absolutely. Avery, thank you, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay? Thanks again for calling in.
All right,
man, thank you for calling. It's going to be okay. Our sport's going to survive. I think we're going to kind of till the ground for a while, and then we're going to plant some seeds, and we're going to grow some giant drug testing trees, and everything's going to be shady and great again. I promise.
Absolutely, man. Let's talk some boxing here.
Let's talk some fights.
Yeah, let's talk some fights. You know. And then we'll go back, I mean, because there are still a lot of more questions out there that people are asking on Twitter. But let's talk some fights, because we do have callers that have been calling in. They want to talk Pacquiao Bradley. They want to talk about the retirement of Moseley Winkie and Antonio Margarito. They want to talk about, you know, Latif and Antonio Tarver, Rodriguez and Trout, the Santa Cruz kid. That's what a lot of folks want to talk about, too, as well. Let's go back this past Saturday, which was a great card that really was supposed to muster up some great fights for a lot of fight fans, you know? And a lot of us were anticipating, couldn't wait. We just were sitting back going, great, here we go again. We're going to have some great fights. This is going to be a great night of fights. And guess what? We did it. If anything, we got some great lines at the end of a fight. Pernice Brewer and Latif Coyote, they both had some say of words that they might want to go back in the time and tap each other on the shoulder and say, don't say whatever you're going to say next. And that's what things happen. Sometimes when emotions come up, I was on another radio show, called me up and asked for an interview, and we talked a little bit about it, but I want to talk about it here on Leaving the Ring. First of all, I want to go with Devin Rodriguez and Austin Trout. Austin Trout, a lot of folks thinking, do you think it's time, and you think he's the guy that can give Canelo some fits? Can he give him some problems? You know, Gabe, really quick, I'm going to give my analysis of that fight. One thing is Devin Rodriguez, to me, just couldn't step up to that next level. To me, he waited too long. I think he was kind of stuck back in the time with Wallach. You know, Powell Wallach was coming forward looking for a fight and was giving Devon Rodriguez a fight. With Austin Trout, this guy's more strategic. This guy's more intelligent in the ring, not taking it out the way from Wallach. But here's a guy that understands himself. He understands his strengths. He understands his weakness. And he's going to capitalize more on his strength. He's not going to risk. He's going to do things in more of a calculated way of doing things in the ring. Devin Rodriguez needed to take that extra step, needed to go for that extra risk. Ending result was he wasn't able to capture or take away that championship from Austin Trout. Now, can Austin Trout obviously be a threat to Saul Canelo Alvarez? I would say yes. I definitely would say yes. There's the thing is that to me, an Austin Trout is a kid that's solid. He's not going to be a guy that has explosive. There's no special effects about him. You're not going to be excited about him to watch the guy, but he's definitely a contender. He's a contender with a belt, but he also can be a contender with the belt that actually ends up becoming a champion. Now, is he going to be one of those signifier champions where you're excited to see? No. He's going to be one of those durable champions, one of those champions that do things in a way to make it comfortable enough to gain a win. Could he upset Canelo? Popularity doesn't win fights. Canelo obviously has that. Skills win fights. And Austin Trout can obviously be one of those guys that can definitely upset a Saul Canelo Alvarez. I'll let you go with that, brothers.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he's a problem. I was there live. I mean, he agreed that it wasn't his best night. You know, he was kind of moving and kind of just didn't quite get his rhythm, is what he said. You know, he understood, you know, I don't think he feels like I'm going to go in there and start brawling now to make the crowd happy, but I think he could have been sharper. But no one really expected what Delvin Rodriguez did. Delvin, by starting to box, he became a little safer now that he's at 154 and dealing with guys that hit harder and probably are more like 60s and 68s rather than 54s, where he's like, you know, he's a welterweight that is now at 154 because it's probably more comfortable and his body's gotten a little older and tougher to make the weight. So he probably feels good at that weight. But I think the power's leveled out. And so he became more of a counterpuncher. It was just a bad style matchup for what Austin Trout does best. So it was not a good fight. I mean, we just all universally agreed it was not a good fight. But
right,
put him in with Canelo, who's a guy that, again, he's kind of more of a counterpuncher. He does pressure, and he's right there with the jab. He's got cement feet, though. And his body's kind of opening up a little more. He's getting a little more loose in the upper body, but those feet, he's just so slow. I think Austin
those
Trout
are some
gives
big
him a lot
feet.
Of trouble.
Some
yeah.
big legs, you know what I mean? I don't blame him to be kind of like, you know, trying to trail through mud because of those big old soccer legs, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, definitely, mm-hmm. definitely. You know, Kid Chocolate, Peter Quillen, getting past Winky Wright, who retired, and 24 hours later, within the 24-hour frame, Sugar Shane Mosley announced his retirement, both of them on Twitter. And, you know, and I've been asked this, was I impressed? I was more impressed with Winky Wright, to tell you the truth. I was impressed that the old man was, he came to fight, you know, and it really put a smile on my face. Though that he wasn't victorious, and though that I picked him to lose and thought out that he was going to be stopped. There was almost a point where that prediction almost came to reality. Right, Gabe?
Mm-hmm. It kind of tripped me out. You know, he almost did knock him out. He caught him in a really nice looping right hand.
Yeah, on the fifth round.
Winky kind of backing out. It was like fifth round. But, you know, he didn't do anything after that. It was like he got afraid of the moment.
That's what really confused me.
Two or three punches after that. Well, what are you doing? Winky was hurt. You could have seen his legs live. I mean, he was hurt.
I was just jumped
on him.
You know what? There's two things. Two things to me that just came to mind when that happened. One was that Peter Quillen doesn't have that killer instinct. Two is that Peter Quillin just doesn't have that killer instinct. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I just can't figure it out. Why wouldn't you jump on the guy?
He certainly does via text. I don't know. You know, I'm not sold on Peter. I got to be honest, and it has nothing to do with the fact that I don't like him as a person. I just look at him as a fighter, and I remember watching him in the gym and thinking, you know, this guy's got all the tools. You know, he moves around really well. I've seen him spar. I've heard he's had issues with his chin, which was kind of funny because I brought that up to him and he got all upset and said, "I told you that." And I was like, "No, actually, you didn't.
Right.
Other people did." But in the ring, I mean, it's like he loads up and he waits for the big shot too much. A guy his size with his speed and athleticism in that division should be popping people with that nice jab that he's got sometimes. He shouldn't be doing the bow and arrow anymore. He still does the bow and arrow. I watched it all through that fight. He's a little tighter and close, but he really is just waiting, and it's so obvious what he's doing, waiting for the other guy to come in and unload his big shot. Big surprise. He doesn't really change it up all that much, just from what I was watching. He just kind of waited and waited, and he had Winky hurt later on. I think it was the 8th or 9th, and he caught him with this brutal uppercut.
Cut, right.
And he was hurt again, and he didn't, like, spin out and just go off. And I thought if he would have just stepped on the gas, he could have gotten Winky out of there, which, I'm sorry. You fight Winky Wright coming out of a 3-year layoff, and he's coming off losses, and he's 42 years old. You should stop him. That should be your goal. There should be nothing else but I'm knocking this dude out because it's the only way this fight is worthwhile. I mean, I know getting those rounds is probably a great experience, but around 8 or 9, you're 28 years old, you're in your prime, you're a natural middleweight, and you promise everybody you're going to send this dude to Pluto. And, I mean, shit, man, you barely got, you know, you got a little lift off. You knocked him down, but, you know.
And it just stopped there. You know,
Houston, in the atmosphere,
right.
You know what I mean?
It was Houston, we have a problem immediately when the liftoff went. And I completely agree.
Yeah.
You know, I agree. Yeah. I don't know where how much chocolate to me right now. There's just too much fudge. He's definitely got to step it up.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't even know where we go with him at the moment. Now,
he keeps fighting. I mean, he'll probably fight for a title next. You know, he's with Al Haymon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Most definitely is with Al Haymon, so he will get that title shot. But how much money do we bank in the stock? I wouldn't put a whole lot at the moment until. Not saying that he doesn't have, you know, the kid doesn't. He's not athletic. We're not saying that. But you know,
What do you think Sergio Martinez would do to him?
I think he would destroy him. To tell you the truth.
Yeah, I do too.
If
yeah,
a Winky Wright, a slow Winky Wright, you know, and this is the thing too, is that this is a 42-year-old guy was landing some combinations, okay, and he was landing a jab, and he was able to land on occasions his straight left, but if we took away the three years away of layoff, okay,
yeah.
and the losses, Winky Wright had enough power in his prime, to keep a fighter honest. Let's talk about Tito Trinidad. His jab kept Tito Trinidad honest. His jab with Shane Mosley kept him honest. Winky didn't have a major pop, but he had enough pop to make you aware that he was in the ring, to make you aware that there were punches coming at you. See, that's my biggest problem with Peter Quillin. You know, if anything, you're going to parade around because you've got a Hall of Famer on your record. Now, that's okay. That's something to be excited about. But
yeah,
at what stage you get him?
Yeah, that's the thing. And yeah,
that's
know.
Like, you know what? That's like going for the prom queen. Didn't get her that night. But then when she had 3 kids already and she's 50 pounds or 100 pounds heavier, you finally get it. And you're not going to be – I mean, come on. I'm going to be like, yo, you're proud of that now? You couldn't get that back then. You got it now.
Well,
there's nothing to, you know, you should be jumping around about.
Well, it depends. Does she have her own car?
Her own place? Her own job?
Yeah,
her own money.
You get older and you start checking certain things off the list. But I get
right.
I just think, yeah, it's kind of that okay, cool. You were supposed to win. You won. You didn't really do anything spectacular. I was more impressed by Winky Wright than I was you. And here's really the capper for me, just to put a cherry on top of this Kid Chocolate Sundae, is I can't say, like, you know, he won that fight, and I can't say, you know what, that Winky Wright would have beaten any middleweight in the world, not named Peter Quillen. I think that Gennady Golovkin would knock that Winky Wright out in like 8 or 9 rounds, maybe not cold, but break him down and stop him. Pirog, I think it's more of an even fight. I think it's a really fun fight, but I think his power and strength take over. I think Sergio Martinez would beat Winky. I think that was kind of the goal, was to win this one and go after Sergio because he needs names. But I think Sergio would take him out. I can't really think of a guy.
I think Issa Mae Smith, man, takes him out too. I think that he beats the
fight.
Kid to tattoo. You know what I'm saying? I would pick him, to tell you the truth.
Oh, over Kid Chocolate?
Yeah.
I want to see that fight.
I would love to see that fight. Yeah, I think that's a great fight. I think that fight should be made, you know. And let's move on really quick. Let's go to and we'll go back to Santa Cruz and talk a little bit about him. But I want to talk about Latif versus Antonio Tarver. You know what, man? Though there was a lot of people that were downing the fight, I found it to be very entertaining, to tell you the truth. I liked the drama in the beginning, and I liked the drama in the middle. I really thought that Antonio Tarver was having a tough time in those first 4 to 5 rounds. I think Coyote lost it towards those end of the rounds. I think he thought that he had a little bit of a padding there, and he decided, even because to me, I don't know what you saw there live, Gabe, but to me on TV, I thought he gassed out a little bit, and he got a little confused because Antonio Tarver, he started to pick it up and figure out Latif a little bit more and became more comfortable with the pressure and power that Coyote was bringing.
I mean, it was why the fight was going to be fun, was because they, both of their deficiencies kind of worked together, you know? Latif, I've watched him for a number of years in the gym. He hasn't really, maybe he's improved a little bit, but not all that much. And
right. He's
fallen in love with, like, this idea that he can move, you know, and dance away. And it's like, dude, you are a puncher. Come forward, deal with what punishment you may have to take to get your punches in, beat somebody's ass. And he just doesn't really do that. He kind of got to it in the beginning, and it was, it's always, there was like a weird pride thing with punchers. They want to prove that they can box with boxers. Instead of being who they are, I mean, there's an old axiom. They always talk about styles make fights. One of my favorite axioms is, you know, like you punch a boxer and you box a puncher. And there's no good reason for a puncher, a rough and tumble Nigerian dude with a badass beard and serious power and toughness, to be trying to box with Antonio Tarver, which sets a pace that is really his only chance of winning. Tactically, it was a stupid fight, in my opinion. You know, for Coyote, I don't think he started out right. I mean, why wasn't he digging in that soft body that he had in front of him?
Oh, I know.
You know, I mean,
right.
It just didn't make any sense. It didn't have a beginning, middle, and end. So why was it happening? But you know,
I could think of one reason. One is they practice on a particular game plan, and rather than derailing from it because of the soft body, they stuck to it. And end up leaving Antonio Tarver more into the fight and able to build himself back into the fight, if anything. So it's one of those things that I was very surprised. I got to tell you that. I was really surprised at how soft around the belly Antonio Tarver was. You know, I mean, he had a little bit of man boobs there for a minute. You know, if you covered the face, for just a short bit, he looked like a smaller version of James Toney.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, so I tweeted out. I was like, you know, he should have worn black. I hear it's very slimming. And he wasn't, you know.
Wow.
He wasn't fat. But he wasn't, it's just, you know, you should, I mean, like this card, what it was for, you know, even if it was like forewarned or whatever, it was old guys versus young guys. It was old guys with pedigrees against young guys. What's supposed to happen in that scenario? The young guy's supposed to beat that ass. And they didn't really go and do that. You know, like, the guy with, like, one of the tougher assignments on the card, Leo Santa Cruz, who I thought, you know, I was impressed with his tenacity and the amount of punches he threw. I've been excited about him for a few fights. I wasn't completely blown away by this, but I was proud for him that he won his first title. He fought a South African dude that was not going to go away. I mean, he'd been stopped before in the first round, but I don't think of Leo as a one-punch knockout artist, so I didn't hold it
right
against him. But that dude grounded out against somebody that had been off for a little while, but was right there in their physical prime as well. He had a tough fight. Everybody else, it was like, you know, Trout and Rodriguez didn't quite audition for Canelo. They had to be on their mind, like, go risk, go get it. I mean, they fought like they were afraid to lose in some respects. Or Trout just didn't quite get into his rhythm. Coyote, I just thought, he didn't fight like a younger guy that was stronger and natural to the weight class. He looked at Tarver and got cautious and got cute, started showboating, and it was just awful.
I mean, we talk about the commentary that Antonio Tarver brings, you know, on the side, on the ring side.
I love his commentary.
Yeah, and he was all business in the ring, where Latif was commentating the fight outside the
mm-hmm.
ring, which I found really weird about, you know, and it was almost like I tweeted it out. I said, he's got the spirit of Johnny Tapia. Johnny Tapia was known for doing stuff like that, commentating, you know, looking at the camera, gibbering, jabbering away, and Latif had that. And, you know, I don't know whether or not that sways the judges or not. I was not upset, to tell you the truth, with the decision. It was a tough fight to score. They were having their moments back and forth. I had given, you know, Latif the beginning rounds, but I really felt that Antonio Tarver picked it up, figured it out, and once he started to get the wheels turning, they really did start to turn.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It was a weird card. You know, I wasn't completely blown away by it. You know, it was kind of something that I don't know. It wasn't that, I just wasn't that excited by the whole card. You know, it was okay. The Quillen White fight I thought was interesting, just because I was surprised that Winky brought it the way he brought it, and the kind of shape that he seemed to be in. You know, he really fought desperate, and he made that fight. The main event, I just was like, eh. You know, it's just there was a certain passion or something that was missing for me. But, you know, I like guys that are risking. I like guys that go for it. I didn't – all night long, it was like I just didn't really – except for Leo Santa Cruz. Sharif Bulgari won by knockout. That was cool because I like that guy. He just is a really positive human being. And he should be doing more. I mean, he's doing the opening card or the second fight on a card, rather. I think he should get a little bit more. But overall, I'm more excited about this weekend's card than I am.
Excited about this weekend's card. And we got a lot of people that are excited about this weekend card that want to talk Manny Pacquiao versus Timothy Bradley, give out their predictions, or find out more or less what we're thinking about. Let's pass in some fight fans, you know. Let's get past this past week. We're going to have Latif, though, to come on and talk a little bit about that draw and about what he had said about Showtime and what's happening from there. But let's get some fight fans on here on Leaving the Ring. Talk to us here, 3 hours of boxing talk. Be sure to tune in to Boxing Fix every Sunday night and Noche de Boxeo on Monday nights. Okay, so we make sure we try to cover it all here on Leaving the Ring. Let's get CT, who wants to talk Pacquiao versus Bradley. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing tonight?
Good, man. How you doing?
Doing great.
I'm doing okay. I'm just very excited about this fight this weekend. I've been saying this for like a couple years now that I've been wanting Bradley to win just because he deserves it. I mean, I think Bradley brings a lot to this fight that Pacquiao hasn't seen in quite a while. You know, he's been fighting a lot of fighters who come straight forward in Moses and Marquez's case. You know, they backed off a little, gave him movement. But I think in Bradley, he's fighting somebody who's very mentally tough. You know, and Bradley's also very versatile in the ring. He can move forward. He can fight backward. He can also fight side to side. I also think, you know, Bradley's very athletic. I don't think Pacquiao's fought a lot of athletic fighters, you know, recently. I think, you know, Bradley's very quick at foot and hand at the same time, and he can cut distance pretty well. So that's going to give Pacquiao some trouble, too. I also think, you know, Bradley's pretty good with defense. You know, he can weave his head. He sees punches coming pretty good. He has pretty good head movement and reflexes. And I think he goes to the body well. I like Manny Pacquiao as well, but I see a lot of flaws in Pacquiao, as well as Bradley too. But I think with Pacquiao, he needs a fighter to stand right in front of him. He has this little bounce that he does, a little rhythm that he does, you know. And he throws these little feints, and he goes in and rushes in with that combination and hand speed. I think Bradley's going to be a little bit physical with him, push him back, and also be versatile, you know, come forward sometimes, and then give him angles himself. So I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be an explosive fight. He's definitely going to trade punches. But I'm picking Bradley by decision. Only thing I'm worried about is, you know, Bradley opening up a little bit too much and getting caught with a counterpunch. I got money on Bradley, so I'm hoping that Bradley wins.
You know what? This fight here, we talk about flaws. You're absolutely right. Both guys got some flaws. It's an exciting fight. I can't wait for this fight. You know, my pick is Bradley. I've been open about it. I've said it right when it first got even side off. I thought that Bradley, to me, I think that Bradley can take this, you know. Now, whether or not, if Bradley gets caught with a hard shot, we've seen him get up. We've seen him recover in a fast recovery. We've seen him adjust to it, not just on his own. He's had Joel Diaz, who's a great trainer, in my opinion, who knows how to kind of set the pace for his fighters and kind of understands how to prep them through the motions of figuring out themselves. That, you need that in a trainer. In terms of guidance. You know, when you don't have that, when you have somebody that has a blank stare with you and just telling you, okay, just do what you got to do, just keep punching, you leave a fighter kind of in the center of the street with no light, and you're just walking in the dark. Timothy Bradley has a great corner, and I've said this before. This is really a match of two great fighters. Two fighters are going to go at it, but at the same time, you got two corners. They're intelligent. Freddie Roach has kind of fallen off a little bit. You know, we've seen Freddie not be able to adjust his fighter. We've seen Freddie kind of fall apart and just keep telling his fighter the same old thing over and over, and his fighters have survived on doing the same thing, either win or lose, but they've survived. With Timothy Bradley, this is a different beast. Different beast, a different tempo, a different measure of fighter he's going to be facing. And a lot of fans, I know there's a lot of fans out there that are looking at Timothy Bradley as like, well, you know, this guy's been hurt, you know, he's got an ugly style, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe a headbutt. There's a righty versus a lefty. Of course, there might be a headbutt. Even with against two conventional fighters, orthodox fighters, there's always a possibility of a headbutt. I'm more curious of finding out what type of Timothy Bradley, how many adjustments does he make, and can Manny Pacquiao adjust to it? Because his power cannot carry him alone at this welterweight match.
Yeah, I agree. I really love the press conference they had today. And, you know, Bradley really got Manny's face today. I was, like, shocked by it.
Well, there was something that Joel Diaz and I talked about way back when they first announced the fight here in Los Angeles. And I said, you know, all the other opponents, and we brought this up, I brought this up again, and Tim kind of reiterated it. He wants to smash Manny Pacquiao. He doesn't want to go the distance and play around with his ass. He wants to knock him around, show him no respect, push him back. Don't treat him like Manny Pacquiao deity. Treat him like another fighter.
Right.
And, okay. I think that's the key. That's one of the keys. And talking to people that I know that know Manny well and know his ins and outs very well, and even with his kind of newfound way of boxing, since, you know, they were talking about Manila Ice and all that, like he uses the right hand a little bit better now. Loses movement more now that when he deals with bigger guys, he faints a little bit better. All those things, like, you know, there are going to be a little bit of problems for Bradley if he leaves it in space. If he kind of keeps pressing Manny and gets physical and pushes up on him and kind of moves him back, that is going to be a big key to this. I think also he understands his combinations. Like you talked about versatility. I think Tim's very hard to hit. I think he's much harder to hit than people give him credit for. He's got a better chin than people give him credit for. I know he got flash knocked down twice against Kendall Holt. Surprise, Kendall Holt's a puncher. I find it, you know, I think it's an intriguing fight. I think it's a tough fight. I really like Bradley by SD, you know, by a split decision. I think he may get a balance shot or something on Manny or a point somehow up on Manny, and he's going to pull it out.
I think there's more of a storyline.
There's more of a storyline here if he wins. And it's
right.
Just insurance. It's a better way to end Pacquiao's career almost than letting Floyd Mayweather beat him and knock him out, is to introduce the next top-ranked star that beats Manny Pacquiao, then does a rematch. And even win or lose, everybody's going to know who Tim Bradley is in that rematch, you know, once he wins this fight. And I think that's kind of the plan.
Hmm. Okay. Did you guys get a chance to see ESPN today when they kind of asked Pacquiao, you know, in an interview, do you know anything about this guy? It's almost like, you know, ESPN is who they are, and they don't really cover boxing as much. So I expect that, but the way they're just talking, like, do you know anything about this guy? I mean, Bradley's a very good fighter. I put him up there, like, one of the best pound for pound, you know, in top 10.
You're talking about, like, Skip Bayless and
yeah. I don't know the guy's
name. Never talk about our sport ever again. They're not that bright.
Come on.
I actually ran into, and I'll kind of name drop a second. I was kind of in the elevator. I used to work at this hotel in Hollywood, and I think it was during the ESPYs, and Spike Lee used to come in a lot, and I would check him in. I checked him in like 3 or 4 times, and he didn't know my name, but we knew each other by face, or he knew my face. I know who the hell he is. We talked about the Knicks once, and that was kind of on. But him and Stephen A. Smith get in the elevator with me, and I'm going up to Spike's room, bringing him stuff, you know, bringing him his bags and welcoming him in, and they're talking. And I mentioned boxing. There was a fight, I think a Hopkins fight, coming up that weekend. And, yeah, he didn't really know much about boxing. He kind of picked Hopkins. You know, I think he's from the same town, so he kind of went with Hopkins. Spike was kind of quiet. I just, you know, you can tell when people can have an intelligent conversation about a subject and when they're just kind of picking the front runner. And that's my impression of Stephen A. Smith when I met him.
Right.
So,
CT, I'm going to put you.
I wish he would stop talking about our sport because he has a very large audience, and he just spews nonsense at them about our
exactly.
sport.
Exactly.
I'd prefer silence.
CT, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother. We got a lot of calls, and we got our next guest that's going to be coming up in about 8 minutes here on Leaving the Ring. Thanks for calling in, brother.
Right. Thanks, man.
You know, really quick, let's take in another caller. I see one right now, a special name here. Mr. Kid Chocolate, Peter Quillian. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
What's up? How y'all doing over there?
Doing good, man. How can we help you out?
I'm having a good day. You having a good day?
I'm having the most blessed day that I ever had.
Dude,
hey, congratulations with your win over a week.
Day.
You're right, first off.
Hard-earned victory. It was very hard-earned. You know, I can't take anything for granted with that victory.
Hey, you know what? Hard-earned. I understand what you mean, hard-earned and stuff. But let's talk a little bit about the criticism, though. I mean, is it fair for us to be hard on you on facing a guy that hasn't fought for 3 years, who has several losses, and is over the hill at being 42 years old? I mean, is it fair for us to criticize that or unfair?
Well, you should criticize all the people that watched it, because if it's an audience, then why not do it? I've been calling for bigger fights. I've been hoping to get some big names, but haven't secured one of those big names. So my team has to make sure that I get a fight to be able to, you know, maintain my lifestyle. So I'm very blessed that I can able to fight Winky Wright for some money. And
what do you mean your lifestyle? What
lifestyle
that?
Meaning that this is my job. This is how I pay my car note. This is how I pay my rent. This is how I'm in the West Coast and on the East Coast. So that's what I mean by my lifestyle. My lifestyle is dedicated 100% to boxing. I think about boxing. I live boxing. I do boxing on off season, which is no off season for me. I'm in the gym all the time, so
you are.
I accumulate bills. You know what I mean?
Into that gym, I can vouch for him. Every time I go in the gym in wild card, you've always been there working hard. I wouldn't take that away from you.
I don't think there's a questioning of his work ethic at all. I mean, I think that you could see it in his body that you work out, you prepared. I even mentioned a little earlier, you know, you're a guy that has skills, but it my whole analysis of what happened on Saturday night, Peter, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. I thought that you backed off of knocking him down because there was a lack of killer instinct there. What happened? You knocked him down, but you didn't go for the attack. You backed off.
Well, you know, with a guy like that, you can be putting, I can put everything out on the line, but for a Winky Wright, he's a very smart fighter. You know, I haven't been in the deep trenches with, you know, 10 rounds with somebody that's been in there with the likes of Trinidad, the likes of all these other guys, you know what I mean? It was a big accomplishment that I did drop him, he got back up, and, you know, it's better to make sure that you're throwing smart punches, punches that mean something, than throwing a whole bunch of punches that don't mean anything, you know what I mean?
I can understand that. Did you not think he looked really hurt. I had a pretty good seat. It was like dead center, and like right in the back of press, so I had like a nice perspective. You know, I wasn't all jammed up on the ropes. And he looked pretty hurt to me. I mean, he wasn't Zab Judah hurt, but his legs were rubbery. But when you looked in his eyes, did you not see what you wanted to see to step on the gas?
I noticed his body. I started to try to pressure him. I stand in front of him, forced him to fight, you know, and then once you start fighting, then I fight back, you know, and in his eye, he never lost the focus of, you know, in his eye, I always seen that he wanted to try to beat me, regardless what it takes. He, you know, he had to worry about not looking bad in front of his people as well. He had a big entourage of people, and, you know, Layla Ali was there, so it's a lot of pressure on him, you know what I mean? But what I know is that, you know, he was trying to give me everything. When he was throwing punches, he was moving forward. I didn't expect him to move as forward as much as he did. I kind of felt that, you know, for the first part of the even when punching him, he still wanted to press the action and everything.
He did press the action. You know,
he could have pulled Omar Narvaez on you, like the way he did with Nonito Donaire, where he didn't engage, or kind of like the, I don't know if you saw the Rodriguez fight,
right,
you were getting ready, you know, but it was like he engaged you.
And I think that's what makes him more of a better fighter is, you know, being able to be in those moments with those type of fighters and to be able to stand up and, you know, take whatever they're going to deliver and, you know, deliver my own, you know, setup that the trainers wanted me to do. And, you know, like I said, I don't take anything away from Winky Wright. Yeah, he was old. Yeah, you know, I don't know if his preparation for the fight was much as mine. That's what I always questioned, if he was going to be in shape. Because if he was to be in shape, then he was able to make a good fight. I don't think by far the fight was a boring fight. I think being a fan of boxing, you have to be a fan of what is going on as far as the fighters that are being made. And, you know, I don't want to talk bad about all the other fights on the car, and I did see them all.
Your fight had more movie moments. It had more peaks and valleys. It had more personality than all the other fights.
I'm not going to lie, Peter. I honestly didn't like the fight. I mean, I didn't like it when they called it. I didn't like it when they signed it. I'm not going to lie to you. I have you here live on air. It'd be a punk move for me to tell you, oh, I liked it, when I really didn't, man. I was really against
this fight. Tell me what fight you would like to see me in.
Oh, man, the fights I like to see you in, you're just not going to do. You said
like
it doesn't make any sense. It's Easton Stay Smith. I like that fight.
When the fight was made between me and him, it wasn't a fight that is worth TV exposure.
How about
now? TV networks didn't approve that fight because of what you say and what story is behind the fight. You know, don't you think? I really don't like Easton Smith.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I'd like to back you up on that. I can confirm that. I've talked to the networks about that fight, and both times I was told, "Are you kidding?" So, and I don't think it was because of Peter. Sorry to Ishe Smith. I don't mean to be.
I know, but he's asking me what fight I would like to see. I'm just saying,
right.
This is that fight I would like.
Now,
hey, Peter. But Peter, hold on, real quick. I just got to ask this one question, real quick, because a lot of us have been wondering. Some metaphors, man, like this one metaphor, the Pluto, where did that come from? Because that was like way out of left field.
Well, you know, to be a boxer and to be an entertainer in a sport that like entertainment, you have to give the people something to look forward to. So when I say Pluto, metaphorically, I'm saying a place that somebody has never been. Like, I haven't been to Pluto. Winky Wright kind of expected he know what Pluto looked like because he thought he signed up for a fight that he already seen. He'd been in all these tons of wars and all these great fights, but he actually haven't never been up in a fighter with me. So I'm saying that with the fight with me and him being made, it was a kind of off-the-planet type of fight because, you know, I'm a young guy, he's an older guy, he's light-skinned, I'm dark-skinned, I have a missing tooth, he has all his teeth. You know, this is something that this guy never saw. So when he signed the contract to challenge me, which he made me the challenger, but he challenged me. And it was a fight that, you know, they was talking about for a year or something. And I was like, no, listen, I really want these guys. They tried to pursue a fight with Andy Lee. And as you seen, the fight fell through. You know what I mean? I was there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like, I want to fight Andy Lee. This is a great fight for New York City. Let's make it. The fight never been made. Now he's fighting Chavez Jr., you know what I'm saying? So
right.
I can understand I can't be personal about things that can be made and what can be made, you know what I'm saying? At the end of the day,
yeah.
When they bring these different opportunities, I'm looking like, okay, tell me what it is that I need to do, you know what I'm saying?
I guess, you know, one of the things that boxing fans have, and I don't hold any of that against you. It's your career, it's your right, you know? Like,
right.
I work where I want to work, you know, and I wouldn't listen to your advice about where I should work, you know? I'm just going to do what I'm going to do, and so I respect that. But I just think back to, like, the 70s and the 80s, even some of the 90s, where dudes didn't talk like businessmen. They just said, like, this is the guy I want to knock out. Like, Ishii disrespected you. He talked a lot of shit to you. He caused a rift on this show by going off on you. And Ishii, I consider him somebody that I'm friendly with in the business. And let me clarify, around the time you guys got in your argument, that's when I asked the networks about it, and they weren't interested. That was a long time ago. And you guys do have a known history now. There's a storyline. He's been active. He just fought and he won.
I follow his career.
Do you want to punch him in the face on live TV for money?
Listen, this is what I want to do. I want to make sure that the next fight that I get is worth a large amount of money.
That's a yes or no answer.
I don't want to fight him unless they pay me for what I'm asking for.
Right.
It's the same three things. It's the same three things.
I'm not being rude. I'm asking you questions. You're not answering them.
I'm saying no.
How many tickets
did you
sell the other night?
How much money did I make? I made
no,
so tickets.
How many tickets did you sell?
I don't count. I'm not picking master, brother. I'm not picking master. I don't keep count of that.
Yeah, but everybody gets it. Sell their
tickets. If I was Ticketmaster, then I'd have to tell me. You know, let me tell you, all I care about is training and fighting hard. That's all I care about.
But don't you
everything
want people to see you?
I mean, people going to see me. Obviously, I've been on 2 exposure on HBO and now Showtime. Now they talking about me another appearance.
I'm just curious why you talk more like a businessman. It sounds safe to me.
Because I am business-minded, brother.
Does it bother you that
I'm
you haven't fought anybody that's coming off of a win?
I'm business-minded, brother. Like, they asked me one day, am I ready to get back in? I told them September, October,
that.
I'm ready.
I can respect that. You know, I honestly understand where you're coming from, Peter, and the only one that's going to take care of Peter Quillen is Peter Quillen.
I can understand that. I don't know. If somebody treated me like that, I would want to fight them.
I mean, that's personal, though. That's where it draws the line.
Hang on a sec, man. You keep interrupting me. Let me finish. Please let me finish my thought. You and I both go on long tangents. Let me finish mine. I'm just looking at your fellow Al Haymon client, Chris Areola. Last year he fought, what, 5 or 6 times? It didn't always mean that it was HBO. He fought on Telepatura. He ate his pride a little bit, and he'd been to the mountaintop. He'd done what you have not done. He'd fought for the world title. And he was willing to do that and just be active, and he's become a better fighter because of it. What I watched on Saturday with you was a guy that doesn't fight often enough. I think you could get off more, and your reflexes and everything would be there. I think you would have finished Winky Wright had you fought a couple more times in between.
Well,
I really do. I think you're a talented fighter.
I don't think you're allowing
yourself to be as good as you could.
Can I say something?
Oh.
Well, I think – a fighter can only do so much before he becomes Superman. I never in my life ever would say that I'm Superman or I'm a boxer with superpowers, because this is why I fight, is because it's all about the challenge. Now, Winky Wright, when the fight was being made and being sold or whatever the case may be, I took the fight because it was no other opportunity out there for me to make the money that I was making with Winky Wright. Al Haymon and what he has business with Chris Areola is different from Peter Chocolate Quillen. I'm way in a different position than Areola. He fought for a world title. Yeah, maybe he had to take some stints to take him back. You know, he lost a lot of weight. He has a lot of things personally that he probably was working on. That my life is all around boxing. So me getting signed with Al Haymon, and you know, it wasn't because I seen what Chris Areola was doing, nor Floyd Mayweather. I just wanted to make sure that I have the best team as possible to get me to where I want to be at.
We can respect that. We can respect that. Peter, I got to end this because
I just got to say, hang on. Let me one rebuttal in. I mean, you fought four times last year. The last time you fought was November, you know, against Craig McEwen. It's June. It's the first time you fought.
Yeah, but I wanted to fight Andy Lee in March. The fight could never happen. That's what I'm trying to say. Peter Quillen is for
June. I mean, it's June. I mean, why didn't
you? And then March, though.
Listen. Peter, I'm just. All I'm saying to you, we're just
the
talking
about. The question you're asking, all the questions you're asking,
is Andy Lee the only guy in your division?
I'm right now the number one middleweight in the country. I'm number two guy that dropped Winky Wright ever in his whole career.
So you want to fight the winner of Golovkin and Pyrov? You think you're ready for that title shot?
There's no problem.
Because you haven't fought anybody coming off
of
a win.
There's no problem, though.
Since,
and who are those names that you said, who have they fought? Let's say everybody knows them. Boxing is losing fans, Gabe. So a lot of these fighters, you go look at the top 10 all around you. Half of those names you probably can't pronounce or know.
It's really weird.
Is
you're so defensive. And, like, the plan I'm laying out or the things I'm asking you, you're very defensive. You're very emotional right now. You need to calm down. And you need to have a dialogue with me, not you talking over me. You're very rude. You're very rude.
I'm not rude. You know what it is? For you
you're
to be able to communicate about
you're very impudent,
and
you're very young.
That your opinion
and
is
you
not
don't know what you don't
right
know. And I think that's your problem.
What you don't know is
you
that
haven't
I'm fought
anybody
listed.
Coming off a win in a very long time.
I live boxing, brother. It's
I don't
know
that. I said that on the show. You train a lot.
You
don't fight that often. And you look
it's
like a guy that looks better in the ring in the gym than you do in the actual fight.
You never talk about fighting. You never fought. So how could you say I'm not fighting enough?
What do you mean
I
never fought? What are you talking about? I haven't been on HBO, certainly.
You never had a fight in your life to know how many times it's too much time to fight in 1 year. How many times you got to fight in 1 year?
Okay, you're right. Peter, you know, I bet you a bunch of money that you're not going to get knocked out by the winner of Kennedy, Golovkin, and Pyrog. That's probably never going to happen.
I'm in America.
You're the next Hagler. You really are. You're the man, dude. No, Peter, you're the man.
You are. Great
fighters.
Hey,
I can't wait
this.
To read your next article.
Peter,
I can't wait to read it.
Thanks for calling. I gotta take our guest stuff, man. Hey, just to clarify,
Peter, it's
this
always
really
a pleasure, and I love when you talk trash about me on Fight Eye. Thank you for making me famous.
I don't know. It's all right. The more I give you, the more like.
No, you're the man, though.
Peter, to clarify this.
You're totally
not
going to get knocked out by Kennedy Golovkin.
Clarify anything you want to
talk.
That's
totally
why
not
going to
happen.
So let's clarify anything you want to clarify or answer whatever questions you want to answer me.
I want to clarify this because the last time you came on, you know, I heard that we set you up. And I just want to clarify.
No. I don't have problems with you, brother. I think you're very cool. I like talking to you. So no matter what your opinion is about, you never crossed the line with me. I think your boy Gabe over there, he's the one that disrespected me because, you know why? Because
he did not.
Yes, he did. I got disrespect because it was a fight that I already asked for, and they told me that it doesn't make no sense because no network was going to give me the things that I wanted, which is the exposure or the money or anything else.
Why
that's
should they at
me.
That point?
Because, you know, that's what I was looking
against
for.
Against the guy that was like,
fight,
I think they pulled him out of mouthball. What did you deserve? This sport is not about deserve. You get in the sport what you negotiate.
Listen, I understand that. That's why, exactly, I didn't take the fight with E.K. Smith because it don't make no sense.
Better than you how to run your career.
It doesn't make sense. Your boy is just sitting on his ass because he can't trying to find one opportunity for himself because he does bad business. That's why. You go Google E.K. Smith, you're going
to
see his history. It's just
calling
out fighters.
I got his phone number.
But, whatever, man. It's good that you got his number.
Listen, I got to let you go. I got to get my next guest who's been waiting patiently.
I want to just say one thing. I don't have a problem with you, nor Dave. Dave is entitled to his opinion, and most of the times it's not right, but, you know, I accept that. And at the end of
the
day, I'm going to continue to be who I be, and that's all I can be. You know what I'm saying? Without being in the Army. God bless you.
Right. God bless you, too.
Good luck on that whole testing thing with Wright and Quillen.
Let's pass in our next guest here. It got a little ugly on leaving the ring, but we got it all back together. The dark cloud did strike from the beginning. Almost 2 hours of the show here. Peter Quillen, thanks for clarifying that we didn't set you up last time and this time around.
You set yourself up.
You know, But let's get in our next guest. Like I said, you know, who's been waiting patiently, who's the trainer and manager of Marcito Gesta, Vince Parra. Yes. What's up, brother? You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's going on? How you guys doing, man? I was enjoying listening to that, Gabe. Damn, man, you guys were on there, man. That was good stuff right there.
There's a lot of hidden personal stuff, and not so, you know, hidden. I mean, he went on Fight Hype and he trashed me. He said, guys like me are the reason, you know, boxing's being killed. Why am I always causing controversy? And this was after I gave him a really good opportunity, man to man. Like, I called him. He held me on the phone for like a minute, and then he hung up after making some comment. And I said, dude, you know, I'm trying to do you a solid. I'm breaking this thing about Wright and Quillen. You do SADA testing. Everybody knows we don't like each other. It'd probably be better for you to talk to me than to not. And he basically told me to F off. So, and then he went and trashed me immediately on Fight Hype. So that's why I
treated
him
that. Yeah. Yeah.
But, what he got.
You know what? Talking about a rant really quick here, Vincent. I saw your rant on Twitter. I saw what happened. You were very upset with the Ring magazine had said about your fighter. You want to fill everybody in really quick in about what happened. They called your fighter most protected at the lightweight division.
Yeah, correct. I mean, it upset me, not so much because, I mean, people can write whatever they want, but I grew up in boxing, and I grew up with Ring magazine, and I grew up in a time where Ring magazine wasn't owned by a promoter, and it was sad to me and comedic at the same time, because the magazine that I've been, you know, that I've read all my life, you know, growing up, here they, it was wrong because they didn't do their homework, and I felt that it was a little misleading, and for us, you know, people can say what they want, but it was more personal for me because it's Ring. I love the Ring, but I feel tainted, you know, at this point, you know, and that's not just to mention what they said about my guy, but just overall, you know, the writing's on the wall to me as far as I'm concerned. So, but it just comedic to me because it's the guy who wrote it. I'm not even going to mention his name to give him the plugs, but if he would have just made a couple of calls to the West Coast, then, you know, he would have found out who Marcito Gesta was and how we do business.
You know, last time you came on, you called in, and our conversation was, it was almost not, we were talking about being most protective, but we definitely were talking about a step up. I don't know if you remember that conversation, you know?
Oh, correct, yeah. That was before the last fight we just had, actually.
Right.
The quail fight.
Right, exactly, you know? And when I saw the tweet, not only did I kind of feel for whatever emotions were behind that tweet, is because we've had you on, and I've heard the frustration. I've heard, you know, it's hey, if some guys don't want to fight you, what can you do? So,
right. What
can you do? Let me ask you, on a standpoint of business, which we had Mr. Business on with us a little while ago, what do you do now? I mean, do you go after?
Peter Quillen, I've had the pleasure of, you know, being alongside
Peter.
Peter for a few different camps up at the Wild Card.
He's a nice, funny guy.
Peter's a boxing guy, and he's a good kid, man, and he's good for boxing, just like Gabe's good for boxing. But you know, he does his business his way and his team, so I don't comment on him. He's with Al Haymon, and that's pretty much solid as far as boxing goes. If you want to be on HBO or Showtime, so. But you know, for us, we're like the opposite spectrum. Like, we can't buy a fight with a tough fighter, and it's, you know, the last fight with Quero. You know, the last fight with Quero, that was kind of an opportunity for us. And just to get on TV, because that card was a little bit in shambles in the first place with Gamboa falling out and whatnot. So we looked at it as an opportunity to get on TV and to, you know, just keep busy. It was what it was. There wasn't a budget there. You know, I was going to make sure my guy, you know, made the lion's share of money, you know, in order to, you know, do what he had to do. But, you know, I've yet to have one guy call me, one manager of any of these guys. I mean, one might got a fight, and I'm very open with Bruce Tampa and Carl Moretti. I mean, they think I'm crazy. They think we're, but it's not about that to us. I mean, it wasn't, a year and a half ago, we fought a 12-round fight for $5,000 just for the opportunity to get ranked. So
yeah,
it's not us. We don't care. We know that we have to start off somewhere, and we need to fight somewhere. We're saying, let's fight. Let's do it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's just the kind of the guy Mercito is. And that's how we feel about our guy.
Let me ask you this,
at this point, all it is he doesn't have a marketable enough name. So it's, well, how do you get that?
Well, I mean, I would say he's as marketable or as known as Kid Chocolate is. The Kid didn't have – there wasn't anybody cheering his name at the Home Depot.
Right.
They were all cheering Winky Wright. I don't know if HBO – I didn't watch – or Showtime. I didn't watch the replay. It was pretty loud cheering for Winky. The crowd – he won the crowd. Peter won the fight, but Winky won the crowd. And we were all kind of came away talking about, like, Winky Wright and what was wrong with Peter. Correct me if I'm wrong, Vince. You're a respected trainer. I like your work. Don't you think that if Chocolate had a couple tune-ups, or even Winky, if he had a couple tune-ups, it might have been winning that fight the way it was won.
And I know what you're saying there. The way I look at it is there's been times where, at the beginning with Hesta, he was stale and he wasn't fighting. But at the end of the day, if you're not fighting, you're not a fighter and you're not getting better. So you have to take what's given to you.
Yeah,
so that's kind of the philosophy we've taken, and just fight who's in front of you.
Well, and I don't think it's any secret that the fighters, I don't think that the skills have disappeared, but they're just not as good, and the offense isn't as sustained, the defense isn't as tight as they were in the old days. And what's the difference? Those guys fought every couple months.
Right.
They fought every couple weeks sometimes. I mean, Sugar Ray Robinson, a famous example, he fights Jake LaMotta, 15-round war. He takes a tune-up the next week. They fight again. I think it was within 3 weeks. And so it was like, brutal war, tune-up guy that he knocked out. And then he fights LaMotta again in another 15-round brutal war. And the guys today, they don't understand that kind of sacrifice. And that you better.
No, they don't.
Because you can't fight that often when you get cut and hit and butt.
Right.
Whole different world. What's next for you guys? What are your options?
Just for that.
Go ahead.
Just really quick, the beep that you're hearing is the beep of somebody trying to get a hold of us, just to let us know that we are now banned from the wild card as well.
You being serious right now?
No, I'm just kidding.
That's funny. Don't scare me like that.
I know.
That's funny.
Oh, my God. Go ahead and ask your question, because I got one for Vincent as well, man.
Is it frustrating to you to listen to a young fighter kind of talk like a businessman? I mean, I guess he's with Al. We both know the deal. He's going to get a couple fights and probably be fighting for the title next year. Yeah, and none of those fights will be like for Hernandez, or who knows what middleweight they'll give him. Maybe they'll give him a junior middle that he can take out and kind of have a commercial for himself. The one thing I'll say about Al, he doesn't really develop his fighters very well.
Well, you know what's frustrating?
That's very great. He rushes them and moves them well.
Right.
But like Danny Jacobs, I still contend that the death of his grandmother was significant, too significant for him to have fought. But he wasn't ready for Pirog. And I don't think they scouted Pirog very well. What do you think, Vince? I know it's kind of putting you on the spot.
Vince, are you there? Oh, his call was dropped.
Damn it. AT&T.
We'll see if we can get him back on really quick.
Maybe Al Heyman just like cut the phone line.
Yeah. No, I'll tell you what's good is that for Vince Parra is that trying to see if he's back on with us. We did lose him. Hopefully he calls back in. I'm hoping that he calls back in because we did lose him. Vince Parra, the manager and trainer of Marcito Gesta. You know what's strange is that he's a hot commodity, his fighter, in terms of we talk about fans. I mean, right now we have Peter Quillian and talking about fans. It's, you know, for African Americans, it's always been very difficult for them to get fans, to get a huge following. You know, there's always a stop there. With Marcito is that, and I think we have him back on. Vince, are you there?
Yeah, no, my battery died and I had to go find my charger. I'm sorry about that.
Okay. You know,
but yeah, back to answer your question, Gabe, about that, about, you know, the fighting and, you know, not being able to get the fight you want, or maybe the money you want, or the money you feel you deserve. You know, nothing is ever given to anybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you're not given what you want, the price doesn't look right. You can't sit idle and you know, sit in the gym. You know, I don't
right.
know Peter's situation enough to comment on his habits. I know he's a hard worker and a real talented guy, and I respect, you know how he does his business, because, you know, like David said, at the end of the day, he has to look out for himself. So, but for us, and that's what it came down to, and we would just, you know, you fight who they put in front of you, and you try to look exciting and build the brand so that, you know, the networks want you, and the networks will pay some money and enough money to fight you, you know. So
I just don't agree with the idea that you take a 7-month layoff and you can call that building a brand. You know, I mean, look at what Chris Ariola was doing, fighting all the time. That's building a brand. That's building a fighter, a guy that can handle
yeah.
a lot of situations. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I understand, like, he's got to pick the right fights for himself. And without Heyman, those guys get paid, like, way more than every other fighter. It's just a fact. You know, Andre Berto famously gets paid, what was it, like $900,000 for Freddie Hernandez? He landed 9 punches, you know. So, I don't know. You know, you're in the business. You know better than I do the hardships of waiting around for that fight. You've got Mercedo, and you've got – how many other fighters do you have?
Well, I just got one other fighter. Well, actually two that I work with. And one is, you know, they're both club-level guys, a guy named Aaron Garcia, who was a blue chip. And
right.
This is a club, you know, tough guy. And another kid by the name of Kabir Suleymanov, who actually works out over at the Wild Card, that I help him out too as well, more so from a management standpoint. But it's a rough business, you know. And you know, Mercito is, you know, for my part, you know, he is the franchise, because he is, you know, he is at that point in his career, and he's at that talent level where he can't break through. He just the trick is, you know, getting the right people involved. You know, I'm not Al Heyman, and I'm not, you know, Shelly Finkel or Cameron Duncan. You know what
right.
I mean? But I got someone that'll beat any of their guys. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
There's a fine line there. It's like, who do you put up to go against them? There's no one breaking down our door, Gabe. And to be honest with you, we're not calling people out. We've never been like that. Mercito's a really modest, soft-spoken kid. You know, he's
not
going to get no one face.
I'm not a big fan of the call-out. Yeah.
What's that?
I'm not a big fan of the call-out. I think
no,
you have to have self-respect
I mean, but
in this game.
But at some point, if you don't speak up, you don't get fed.
Yeah,
you know?
There's that old saying, you know, a closed mouth doesn't get fed. You know?
Like I asked him, you know, I mean, I'm just talking on a visceral. You're telling me I've never been in a fight. I don't know what it's like. I have been punched in the face, and I guarantee you, and I've been disrespected verbally. Every one of those people I want to punch in the face. You know, in my head, I'm killing you like a million times, you know, if I don't like you. I don't understand how we wouldn't want to fight Ishae Smith. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
Well, like I said, if you're not fighting, you're not a fighter. Like, that's kind of my dad's old school, man. My dad, my father, God bless him, because if I didn't have him from an advisory standpoint, he goes into the California Boxing Hall of Fame this year, man. And his knowledge, the old sayings, the one-liners, man, they ring true. And that's what he would say, man. You know, he says, hey, if you ain't fighting, you ain't a fighter. You know, if you're going to bitch about this and bitch about that, you know, there's two types of fighters. There's those that fight and those that don't fight. You know,
absolutely.
So, you know, when you're making your bones and you need those marquee wins, you got to step up. That's why, you know, like for Mercito, I've called for a guy like Darby Pettis, who's 25-0. We're 25-0.
That'd be a fight.
You know, I'm saying, okay, if we're both prospects, why do we need to both be, you know, have people look at it, you know, padded until you fight someone who's maybe on the way up or too small for you and you're handed a title? I have a lot of problems with the way that's worked, and a lot of that has to do with the people involved and the cable companies, you know. But you know, you just persevere, man, and you just got to be ready when they call your number.
I don't understand why they don't want to put Mercedo on TV. He looks cool. He's got tattoos. He's Filipino. He's like a better-looking Manny Pacquiao, a little bit bigger.
Exactly.
You know, like, I don't understand what the problem is.
That's only a question that that Carl Moretti and Bruce Sandler can answer, you know, because I'm on him every day, and they'll attest to that, man. It's just like, hey, is that par again with this? Hester will fight pretty much anybody, you know.
Right.
So, we're really low maintenance, man, and we're good soldiers for Bob, and you know, it's like that. I got frustrated over that comment in ring, you know, because you know part of the reason why we signed with Top Rank because Machito really wanted to fight Brandon Rios. It wasn't so much on my part, but you know, he wanted to find a real quick way to that fight. That hasn't worked out, and it may never will. But you know, the reasoning be because he wanted the toughest challenge. You know, and that's what we felt.
Right.
So, you know, it's we're just.
I guess
that.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead, Gabe. Go ahead, Gabe. I'm not going to talk over you, man. I don't want to go there with you, man.
Yeah, you know, hey Vince, you don't want to hear this. You know,
over you,
buddy.
No, go ahead.
That's funny. I totally just forgot what I was going to say. I mean, for me, it's just there's a sense of entitlement. And I understand these guys are giving up their lives for our entertainment. I always remind fans what we're seeing. Very rich people or wealthy people paying very poor people sums of money to fight each other. And the sign, you know, kind of make the guys feel like they're actually, you know, getting ahead in the world. And if they're not smart, they end up broken and brain damaged. I get that.
Yeah,
like,
that's the
ultimate business, you know, it's a trade-off. But at the same time, like, how do you expect me to want you can't fill up seats. You're not really a draw anywhere in particular. You don't fight often enough and in one spot enough to build yourself up as a brand, like a local brand. Who cares that you're on HBO a bunch of times? Like, nobody really knows who you are. I mean, I guess you become a TV star, but that's good for you. That's not really good for the sport.
Right.
That's what I have a problem with. I mean, that whole card, we had a bunch of people that didn't, you know, work from L.A. You know, Leo Santa Cruz was you know, the local boy.
And by the way, like, congratulations to that kid. I know he realized the title, but I mean, if my guy hasn't fought anybody who deserves a title shot, I mean, give me the blockbuster murderer's row that kid had to face on his way up. I'm just saying. You know what I mean? So, you know, to get a world title. So it's a fine line there. Like, you know, I'll be dead honest with you. Like, it's, it's frustrating.
I like Leo, but I thought he did a fine job. And it's always tough to fight an African fighter, or a South African specifically. That style, they're going to come forward. You can be tricky. They're always tough. You see African guy, you go, that guy's not getting knocked out. You know, it's pretty rare. So I thought it was a tough assignment, even though the guy had been off for a while, and he had been stopped before, like I said. But I just knew it was going to go rounds. But still, I was like, why is he fighting for a vacant IBF title? But, you know, sometimes they're like I call it before, like a shield. Not a belt, it's a shield.
Well,
because
now
they control the mandatory and all that.
Yeah, and I don't want to be like I'm knocking him because these kids work hard, and if they get the opportunity, snatch that shit.
Well, they're going to jump on him, you know?
But, you know, I think Mercedo's definitely in a division that's got some exciting fighters, and there's going to be some good fights made if deals have worked out right. And so we'll see. Like I said, they're telling me we'll be back. But, you know, we're looking at hopefully a Friday night fight date, you know, and that's just a build-up, building yourself up marketability-wise. And like, I don't know who, you know, we can get for that card. I know that they're doing a real good show with Ray Beltran and Henry Lundy here in July. So I know there's good fights being made. So it's just about somebody saying yes. You know, there's just too many managers that need so much money to put into these guys that are willing to put their kid up against a fast, southpaw Filipino.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That can fight. You know?
Yeah, you're no one's dream. That's for
exactly.
Sure, you know.
Exactly. Well, Vince, keep going at it, plugging at it, man. You know, and keep us updated. Let us know what's going on. And when you find out your next opponent, definitely tweet us or give us a ring, brother. Hey,
thank you again.
Yeah,
man. I love what you guys are doing, man. And real quick, man, I wanted to big up a good friend of mine, Sugar Shane Mosley, for his retirement, you know, announcement. And that guy had a real profound effect on my career. And, I always looked at him as somewhat of a mentor, and I had the pleasure of sparring with him in 2000 in his preparation for his Cruz de la Hoya camp. And that right there really showed me a lot about what boxing, what world champions, you know, act like. So that, you know, big ups to Shane, you know, and I wish him all the best in his retirement. Also, follow the site up now, Mercito-Hesta.com, for all updates.
Your pick for Saturday night between Manny Pacquiao and Timothy Bradley. Who do you got, brother?
You know what, man? I like Tim Bradley a lot. He's a hell of an athlete, man. But I tell you what, with Manny Pacquiao taking up this religion thing and taking away all the bars and the pool and the cockfighting and the women, you know, I think you're going to get a mean Manny. So I'm going to look at Manny, man. I'm going to pick Manny to stop him in 10 or 11.
Okay. Well, there you go. Vincent Parra, manager and trainer of Marcito Guesta. Thanks again, brother, for calling in.
All right, man. You guys take care.
You too, man. Thanks for calling.
And we should be getting Latif on in a short bit here on Leaving the Ring. We're waiting for him to call in and speak to us. We're going to patch in some fight fans, though, man. We got a lot of calls today, and a lot of people have been waiting very, very, very patiently. Let's put in our friend D. He doesn't have much time, but wants to talk Pacquiao and Bradley really quick. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Real quick, what's happening, fellas? I'm at work. I can't talk long, but I said, let me call him real quick.
I think are you under your desk, dog? Hey, let me ask you, are you under your desk making a phone call, man?
I'm actually in the dressing room real quick. But
go ahead.
Check this out, though, man. I think Bradley's going to do it.
I think Bradley's going to do it, man.
A lot of people say, no, hell no, you're crazy. I ain't going crazy with it as far as putting money on it. I got a little bit on it. But I think Bradley's going to do a little bit of shocking to a lot of people. He ain't going to shock me because I've been watching this dude, and I think he's going to shine on this occasion Saturday night right here, I think, man. I think it's going to be a hit and miss. I think he's going to make Pacquiao do a lot of missing. I'd like to see him do a lot of countering. And, just wear him down, man. It'd be nice to see. I don't think he's going to stop Pacquiao. I think he's going to I'd like to see a knockdown, at least one. And just have him confused the whole night. That's what I'd like to see.
I see
a lot of what you're seeing, D, and I just feel like a knockdown's going to happen. I think it's going to be like a balanced shot. But I also kind of hope for Tim that, you know, if he's winning, that he does get buzzed and fights through it, just so that everybody can go, oh, well, you know, they can't say, well, Pacquiao never hit him clean. Like, I want him to fight through all the obstacles that Pacquiao has to offer and win.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be great for boxing. I think it's time. It'd be a passing of the torch and a beginning of a new chapter for us. We need it. We need Tim Bradley to win, in my opinion.
Yes.
Oh, well, Dave, I'm going to put
I'm real quick, though, Gabe.
With the boy James Kirkland.
Yeah, I was about to say that, man. Oh,
well,
man.
We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that in a short bit,
definitely,
man. But, all right,
okay.
Dee.
James, speaking of not wanting to fight.
You talk about a change of pace in James in the interview. Comes on here like a little boy in a candy store, very excited, and then all of a sudden, the next day, everything just falls apart, man. Just falls apart. We're still waiting for Latif Coyote to call in. So we're going to take one more caller. It's got to be fast and quick.
I almost dated that girl once, what James did to us, you know? Because it got us all excited, you know? I had candles lit, dinner. You know,
show
like,
up.
My
hair's not
night.
Done. I can't make it.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't tell you I had a boyfriend and stuff. Hey, Frank from California.
I made lobster for the first time.
Pacquiao and Bradley. What's up, brother? You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring.
What's going on? All I got to say is it's harder to get into your guys' show than the goddamn Staples Center. Front row. Seriously, this is goddamn ridiculous. David Chen. I like you, buddy. You're a funny guy, but this isn't funny anymore. Yo, man, Gabe, good seeing you at the fights. Latif Coyote was a fool
too,
in the ring. Hopefully you guys bring that out on him. If he would have thrown a couple more punches instead of sticking out his goddamn tongue so much, maybe we would have had a real fight. You know, Dia Davis, I don't know if you guys mentioned that fight. I thought that was the fight of the night. How you guys doing? Yeah, man, Pacquiao in nine rounds. Of Gabe, punch David in the head for playing that joke in the beginning of the show.
Hey, thanks, Frank.
Hey, dude. Frank, one last thing. Margarito announced his retirement. What are your thoughts?
God bless, man. He's got more time to bang his hot wife.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, brother. Get back on hold really quick. We got Latif Coyote with us here on Leaving the Ring. Latif, are you there, brother?
Yeah, I'm here. How you guys doing?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
I'm all right. I'm doing good.
Latif,
nice to hear from you.
You got a draw on Showtime. And, you know, I was asked to be interviewed on another radio show called The Sports Buffet, and they asked me about my opinion about that. And my opinion about what happened in that fight was I wasn't too upset about the draw, but I think most people were more focused on what you said in the post-interview with Jim Gray. And my answer to that was that there was a lot of emotions. It didn't pan out the way you wanted it to be, but I think as human beings, we say things that sometimes we wish we could take back. Is that one of the things that you wish you could have taken back of what you said of Showtime?
What I say about Showtime, I don't mean it. I was so upset. When I said if I withdraw, I was so upset because everybody see I beat Tony Ottava so bad. In height, he's so blocked, swell up. So I do good job. What Tony think I'm bringing to the fight is not what I bring to the fight. I said that earlier. I say I'm coming with different plan that they don't believe. When I came there, I do what I say I'm going to do. But I was so upset. I don't mean it because I've been with this Showtime, Showbox, for like 7 fights. They've been building me, but they've been taking, building my career up. So I was upset. Maybe I mean I working for them, so I was so surprised. I said that before, I realized what I said. I make these mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought the same thing. I thought, you know, there's a lot of emotions, you know, and you know what, and I've said this, when you have competitive fights, and I did mention this on the other radio show, and I want to bring it up here, bringing the light in here on Leaving the Ring, was that when you got competitive fights, when you got two guys that are looking to victor over each other, and they put everything in everything they have in themselves in a fight, that when the outcome is not, when you don't get the expectations of what you were supposed to get, things could, you can have a meltdown. When we've seen it on Showtime, just in the past, we had Juanma Lopez have a meltdown. You know, accused the ref. Now we have yourself with this almost of a short meltdown. You know, with Showtime. But Latif, a lot of fight fans were a bit upset with the turning of the face and talking to the cameras and sticking the tongue out and not focusing on the fight. They feel that you lost the fight, you lost some of the rounds and some of the steam because you didn't pick it up. What happened?
I'm not lost the fight because I do a good job, like I said. I do a good job for that fight, and I make sure I want to win this fight because this fight is mean to me. This fight is a really fight to me. I want to show the world I'm better than Tony Ottava. And I put all everything I have for this fight. I put in there. I'm not bleeding. I'm not gas. I have a full energy to make this fight. Whatever I bring to this fight, I'm ready to take it. And I did a good job, but I'm fixed. I'm not happy for what I say about Showtime because I was really upset when I say that. And nobody tell me to apologize. I feel in my heart to apologize for what I say. I'm really sorry. I'm not mean it. I'm really sorry. If they can forgive me for what I say, I'll be really happy.
I hope they do. I hope they do forgive you because you definitely are putting your manager Steve Fader to work.
I'm sorry. I want to say one thing. This fight, a lot of people want to see the big fight in the United States. We make this fight, everybody. Some people don't go to work. They want to see this fight. See, and this fight He can't just come like that and hand it to drop. No, we have to rematch. To bring a winner between me, Tony Ottawa, let them know I win this fight. That's all. If they don't believe it's drop, we still go to rematch to make sure to all over the world. It can't just end like that. He got to come for winner. So I'm not going to respect him. He's not going to respect me. So I want to know I'm better than him or he better than me. So we have to rematch.
Now, Latif, this fight all started because Antonio was criticizing you from ringside, watching your fights, and you were like, "Look, if you think you can, you know, this is all wrong with me. Why don't you fight me?" Now, I don't want to fight you, but I do want to talk about the fight. you've seen me, so you know I don't want to fight you. Do you regret not being more physical with him early on? He's really soft around the belly. You're the harder puncher. You're the naturally bigger man. Do you think you should have put him into the ropes and taken advantage of him physically a little bit more than you did?
Yes. Yes. Now I know everything he has. Now I know everything he has. The next one I'm going to come with him, quick. I know what he belongs, what he have to. He can't move. That's how he fight. So now I know what to do. I know the time to stay with him. I know the time to let him go. Just a little adjustment for what I do. That's the only thing I need. So I know.
When he caught you with that, he started landing the straight left. He seemed like he stumbled you one time. Did he catch you? Were you surprised?
He got me because when he frustrated, I see him, I'm going behind the jab. Now he frustrated, he set me with the right. He wants to throw the right on me. When he jabbed one, two, the third one, the right is coming. I move away to my side. So now I can see in the eyes, he frustrated because in corner, he was shouting, "Hey, double your jab, everything they tell you to do, I hear whatever they tell you to do." So I'm using everything to control. I don't want to be aggressive. I want to calm down, control the fight. And I do what I do, my job. So I thought I do a good job that you give me the fight because you're a champion. You have a lot of experience. So I bring it down. I let it look like it. He said never got a cut. Nobody cut his eyes. Never swell up. I did it. I make his eyes swell up. I bring it down. I treat it like control the fight on the ring. So I do a good job that you, even if it's a draw, that you use that one for crazy for me. So I do a good job. They don't give it to me. I give myself winner. I win. So I would like to
be honest. I didn't think either of you lost. I didn't think either of you lost.
Right. I didn't think so either.
I feel like a draw in that sense because I didn't feel like either of you dominated long enough to say, like, I was the winner, but you certainly didn't get dominated at all, you know, to me. But the rounds were close, they were hip and tough. But let me ask you this. Do you feel like you just couldn't? This is what I wanted to know. You mentioned experience. You mentioned experience with him. That you could you feel his experience? Could you tell certain things you didn't quite know what he was doing? Were you afraid of like expending too much energy and getting tired because of that?
Yeah. So I have experience. I don't see experience here. He have a fastly or cocoa butter. He used it to rub his body. All my punches was neat. His body was. He put the fastly on his body. And I told the referee, I said, "Tony Ottawa, he fight with the fastly. I don't want you to put fastly in the body." They told me, "Oh, you're not going to use the fastly." Now he put his jacket on. He come to the ring. The referee come up box. So he take his jacket off. The referee don't see he have a fastly in the body. All his body was he was asleep. The punches were asleep on his body. So I don't know. The only thing I want to say right now, I'm really happy. I'm really happy for this fight. This man right here, they respect this man in America. He's a five-time world champion. So they respect him. He has a lot of experience. He fights a lot of John. He fights a lot of people famous. I never fight nobody like that. It's my first time. And I've made it so there's a draw. I'm beating. There's a draw.
You certainly look like you belong. I will say that to you. You know, I didn't think you looked outclassed, and you were in there with a guy with all that experience. And good for you. You know, you work hard. I know you're a gym guy. You know, you're always in the book and always work. So.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Latif, thanks for calling in, brother. Really appreciate it, man, and I wish you all the best.
To you. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hopefully we'll see you fight again soon, and you'll get the fight that you want. If it's not a rematch, you know, maybe it's, you know, I'm not sure, you know, an ESPN fight at least, or
really,
another case
I really
fight.
I really want rematch. I really apologize for Showtime for what I said. They should find forgiveness for me to forgive me. I'm really sorry. I won't do that again.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely,
we'll
man.
The right people hear that. Absolutely.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, man. Take care.
Latif Coyote here on Leaving the Ring, you know, apologizing to Showtime and, you know, let them know it was emotional. I mean, very emotional. Like I said, you know, when you have expectations and they're not met, it can lead, you know, you can, your mind can be a little foggy. We've seen this happen after post-conference interviews immediately after. Things can be said. It's live. What can you do?
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? I don't know anything about saying things in an emotional state. should we get to the fight schedule? I mean, 7:15. I'm probably not going to read the rest of this article. I got to leave something for Max Boxing. And really, that's like almost like what I read tonight was almost like the prologue. You know, there's a writer's note. Like, that was barely a quarter of what is left in that article. So
absolutely.
In case you think I, like, short changed, you know, Max Boxing, oh, he read the article. No, I read the first quarter. there's so much more to go.
Absolutely.
It'll explain a lot of recent things that went on. A lot of recent history. I'm really excited for people to read it. It always feels like Christmas when a story's coming out, and you want to hear what people have to say about the next thing. What I'm most excited about is that for a minute, I think I'll be able to take a pause and write about other fights. You know, I'm going to write about, I got a Bradley piece coming out tomorrow, kind of looking at him in depth as a fighter, and I like doing that. A couple other things. I got this Virgil Hunter long interview, like a two-parter coming out, where we just talk about all kinds of stuff, Andre Ward, Boutte, and things. So I'm looking forward to kind of not getting into a normal schedule because I don't have one of those, but to getting back to just talking about fights. So let's get into the schedule, or do you want to take a guess? What do you want to
I want to take a caller really quick. We do have a lot of calls right now, and you know, they've been on hold. Some guys have been on hold for quite some time here. Let's just patch in a few more calls, and then we'll go to that fight schedule, and then we'll talk a little bit more boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Rich wants to talk about Peter Quillin. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Yo, what's going on? What's going on?
Good,
yeah,
man.
I'm trying. What's up, Gabe? What's going on? Yeah, I was trying to. Yeah, cool, man. Great interview, you guys. So far, awesome.
He's a cool guy. I mean, he's emotional, you know, but he's a lot more intelligent, I think, he's given credit for.
Yeah, no, I hung out with Peter a couple times. Yeah, he's a cool dude. But
oh, Peter?
What you were kind of getting at when we were tweeting back and forth about actual guys fighting and taking fights and all of that, and I just think, like, at this time, you know, a lot of these boxers are just so much, I don't want to say smart, but they have, like, a little more business savvy where they got somebody in their ears. And then back in the days, I mean, you just say fight. They just jump in and then they fight. They don't give a damn who it is, which we all miss, you know. But it's just so much more business involved, kind of diluting the whole sport.
Well, yeah, I think it's, there's a direct correlation. This is not my... I don't know why I'm echoing, right? You guys see that? Somebody have the radio on?
No, I don't hear none. Go ahead.
Weird. Okay, well, although it went away. There's a direct correlation between how little the general public cares about boxing anymore and how little fighters fight, or how seldom they fight, in my opinion. Like Peter's saying, I'm trying to build my brand. But everybody's trying to build their brand the wrong way anymore. I mean, you know, Twitter is a tool. But if I didn't write, why would you care about what I had to say on Twitter? You know, if he's not fighting, like, I don't really want to, I don't really follow a lot of fighters, you know, very few people. I follow a lot of people. I actually follow a lot of fans, and I have a weird way of running my Twitter feed. But it just doesn't make any sense. Like, it's like an actor that doesn't act. Or
no, I hear exactly where, yeah, I hear exactly where you come from.
It's a different game, you know, but also an actor, he better act a lot when he's young so he can establish, it takes 10 years to establish a career. And even get any
right. A lot of these guys, they want that. Yeah, they want the quick fix.
They do.
You know, if you take a guy like, for me, example, like Sugar Shane Mosley, a guy like that, like you could say he was like poorly managed, but then you could say he'd fight whoever the hell. You know what I mean? Like to me, did he really have to fight Vernon Forrest again and like you know Winky Wright and things like that? You know. Those
terrible ideas, but at the same time, it's like legacy. It's what Virgil Hunter said to me about,
right,
you know, everybody
right.
was like, oh, you should have fought Butte. And he's like, well, now we know the guy wasn't that good. He just got taken out in five rounds by a guy we dominated. And, we could have made easy money and it would have been on a larger platform. But it really is about legacy. And I can't sit there and go, no, it's not, because he just did that move. They just didn't fight that guy. And they took a tough fight in Chad Dawson. It's... Like I said to Peter, and he just doesn't like to listen because I've never been in a fight, apparently. and I have no life experience whatsoever.
That was good.
No wisdom to impart. It just doesn't make any sense to me, you know, to sit there and tell me that I don't need to fight that often and I only want the big names. When you haven't earned
it. That's what these guys are doing nowadays, man, so...
Well, in a lot of ways, it is kind of the Haymanization of boxing. I'm not ashamed to say it or afraid to say it.
Absolutely.
Nice guys. I like the Watsons. I like all of them. They're very friendly people. And they do love to fight. But doing, in my opinion, they're kind of gaming it. I mean, I don't like it.
They're not fighting the fight, actually. But in any case, this Saturday, I have to go with Bradley. Only reason, you know, Bradley kind of, you know, I've been following this guy from you know, in the beginning. But he really, really showed and proved when he did his thing against Kendall Hall. I thought that was like, okay, I get it, you know. That was like an amazing fight. And I had Holt winning that fight, believe it or not. And he shut me down.
Yeah. I think a lot of people had Holt, you know, thinking they were going to take that fight and stuff. Hey, Rich, thanks for calling in, brother. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no
problem.
What's
your
official
pick? You got Bradley by
decision? I got him by decision.
All right, another guy that's picking Bradley. All right, and see, I feel now feel better about my pick, man.
Got Bradley. All right, man, take care.
All right, brother. If you want to call in and leave in the ring, 347-215-7598, you certainly can here on Leaving the Ring. Speak to myself, Dave Duenas, and my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. You got to get past the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. But like Frank said, it's harder to get on Leaving the Ring than it is the Staples Center. So you're going to be on hold for a short bit before you get patched in on here on Leaving in the Ring. Be sure to pick up your Undisputed. Just let everybody know, you know, if you buy a May issue, which is only $1.99, you're going to get the June issue for free. Be sure to tune in every Sunday night at 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time, The Boxing Fix. Tell us what you guys think about it. You know, I really enjoy the show. Two guys that write for it, Leaving the Ring, Joss and Joel, they do a fantastic job. It's a Blitz radio show. It's on the horn type of boxing radio show. They cover all the undercards, and they make out some picks, and they do their analysis and breakdown. Be sure to pick to listen to Noche de Boxeo on Monday nights, 5 Pacific time, 8 Eastern time. It's Todo Boxeo, Todo Español on Leaving in the Ring. Anyways, let's get to that fight schedule here, Gabriel.
You got it. All right. June 8th, Friday, 2012, at the Hard Rock Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. And this is weird. My computer, for some reason, thinks today is June 8th. It really kind of freaks me out. Anyway, I've become very paranoid these days. On June 8th, Friday, 2012, at the Hard Rock Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, on ESPN2's Friday Night Fights, Kelly Pavlik, 38-2, The Ghost Returns, versus Scott Sigmund, the Sea Monster, 22-3. I think Kelly's going to knock him out like 7-8 rounds. I've heard he's looking really good in the gym, and he's hurting people on a level that they had never been hurt before. So I think Kelly's back. I think he's sharp. I think he's got another run left in him.
I think so too, man. I'm hoping that he does. You know, it was really hard to tell what he had left of him going against the Jedi, and this time around, you know, you've mentioned this and we've said this here. It normally takes maybe 3 or 4 fights to kind of know more or less how they're doing with the new trainer. Now he's under the tutelage of Robert Garcia. But even with that first fight, I did see him have a little bit more bounce to his legs. So I'm very interested in seeing what he has a little bit more and confidence build too, being in Oxnard, California with the Garcias, and just to see him overall where he's at. I don't know if he's up and ready for a big showdown in the next fight. I would say I like the pace that they're taking with them. Top Rank, they're almost kind of rebuilding them the way they did leading up to the Jermaine Taylor fight. I say just continue that. Let the guy get some rounds in, let him get his confidence, and let Robert Garcia work with them a bit more, so they're more familiar and they're more confident with each other.
Yeah, no, I think it's a nice progression. He's in a new environment. I think he's been reinvigorated. Being around guys like Brandon Rios, a guy that loves to fight and spar. I think that's what Kelly needed, is to have that kind of camaraderie that gym has. You can get to even Manny Pacquiao apparently experienced that in this camp, where they've changed up the sparring partners. And they brought in Ruslan Bogdanov to really put some work on him, which I'm excited for him that he's gotten that opportunity. Him and his manager Vadim, they've really worked hard over the last several years, trying to pan, like everybody panning for gold for that guy to ride to the top. And Bogdanov has shined in his big moment with Manny Pacquiao, being the main sparring partner. Good for him. In support here is Jesse Magdaleno, 9-0 versus Carlos Valcarcel, 12-4-4. I'm going to take Magdaleno in that. I mean, I think this is just kind of a developmental fight, and I think he is the goods. Andy Ruiz, 14-0 versus Kendrick Relliford, 22-16-2. Also there is have you seen Andy Ruiz? I really like him. He's a wild card product as well. The kid came in real fat and just kind of out of shape. And
he's
got really nice boxing skills. Yeah, now he's like really slimmed down. And he's become a nice little heavyweight. I really like this kid.
I think he was on the undercard of Mayorga and Cotto, I want to say. Because
he's
Top Rank, right?
Yeah, he's Top Rank.
Yeah. I know exactly who he is. Yeah, I mean, when he came in, the jokes were about his heaviness and stuff, but the kid did show some skills, and now you're saying that he slimmed down. I'm kind of interested in seeing what he's got. If he was able to move and put combinations together in that weight condition, I like to see what he's able to do when he doesn't have that extra pounds added to him.
Linus, Sigmund the Sea Monster was definitely for you. That dude is the only guy that got that joke. I like Andy Ruiz. Yeah, he's a good kid. Terrence Crawford, 16-0 versus David Rodella, 16-5-3. I like David. He's a quality guy. He's becoming a little bit of a journeyman, but he's a quality fighter. And on any given night, he can win. Terrence Crawford looks real nice. It's a tough fight. This is one of those ones. That if Terrence is real, he's going to win. If he's a little bit less than him, then David's going to get him. And Mike Lee, 8-0 versus Asahia Barella, 4-2. I imagine Mike Lee will win that one. At the Bell Center in Montreal, Canada, David Lemieux, 25-2, returns from his second loss versus Wadiel Zepeda, 12-5-1. Russ Amber, nowhere in sight. I don't know what's going on with David. I haven't talked to him in a long time, but anything can happen with him. I mean, he shouldn't have lost his last fight, but he did. So,
right.
I'm going to pick him to win this. 12-5-1 doesn't look, I don't mean to box wreck it, but I haven't really taken a whole long look at that. I'm more looking at what David's doing. At the Parque Revolucion in Culiacan, Mexico, Jorge Romero, 21-5, versus Christian Favela, 37-29-5, everybody's favorite road warrior fighting at home. I just want to pick Christian Favela just because he's a badass. A nice little card if you're down there in Culiacan. Saul Roman, 35-9 versus Alfredo Contreras, 12-13-2. It's probably going to be a knockout. The rest of the card, there's a lot of journeyman guys. We're kind of evenly matched except for this poor bastard who's 11-28-2. Francisco Villanueva. Just have some tequila ready, buddy. Saturday night, June 9th, at the MGM Grand Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, pay-per-view, HBO, Manny Pacquiao, 54-3-2, versus Timothy Bradley, 28-0, 12 knockouts, for the WBO welterweight belt. That's like been like the one story nobody's even discussed. I think I forgot to mention it in my article about Manny Pacquiao, that it's actually for a welterweight belt. I'm going Bradley. Split decision. I gave all my reasons. I think he's versatile. I think he's like a little Spartan phalanx. You know, he just kind of gets behind his shield sometimes, and he comes out with a spear. He's going to move around Manny Pacquiao, try to combat that movement with physicality, but also angles of his own. It's going to be a beautiful thing. It's going to be his coming out party. But he's going to get a split decision.
You know, I this is what I see with Timothy is that I definitely see Timothy getting rocked in the early rounds, even in the mid rounds. What I want to know is we've seen Timothy get dropped. We've seen Timothy get caught. We've seen Timothy be able to get back up and show true grit, you know, and adjust. Those are the things that I think that are going to be a telling story, you know, and he's facing a guy that has speed. He's got power. You know, can be a fireball, but at the same time, he is facing a guy that's kind of slowed down a bit. Now, is Timothy going to be, is he going to dare to be great? Is he going to be dangerous? The way Joel Diaz says, I mean, Joel Diaz was on Leaving the Ring, and he said, we're going to test Timothy's chin. That's what we're looking for. You know, we're just going to go straight for the horns on the bull. Is it a smart idea? Only they're going to know. And if they decide to do that, then obviously, they must have a plan if Timothy gets dropped, if Timothy gets hurt. And the plan is get on a bicycle, buy yourself some time, tie up Manny Pacquiao, and then go to plan B. I don't find it, honestly, flirting with disaster doesn't sound like the most intelligent or the most suitable thing to do in your biggest fight of your life. I wouldn't go for that. I wouldn't bet that, but you know, Joel Diaz knows his fighter. He knows the capabilities this kid has, and there is no doubt in my mind he's an athlete. He shows the signs of being a true athlete. But there's another sign that he shows too in his eyes. You could see the hunger just burning in Timothy Bradley. And when you talk about a storyline, you're absolutely right. There's a huge storyline that a lot of folks and that weren't following Timothy Bradley in the past that had no clue about. And everything that Timothy's been working for, everything that this guy has put on his back, you know, they always say, worry about the guys that are quiet. The ones that are loud and brass, don't worry about them too much. And Timothy's one of those guys you got to worry about. So
yeah, I would say so. Like, Tim, he's just straight up, like, he's just dead set on this. He's very confident. And it's not cocky. It's like, the more he says it, it's like the more he gives into his own dream. You know, and the stronger that dream becomes and you know, it's just moving towards reality. He doesn't think about losing, he said. You know, he just thinks about kicking Manny Pacquiao's ass. That's all he's thinking about. And I think he gets it. Like Justin always talks to me about that. He's like, the way to beat Pacquiao, all these guys, he said the second he saw, you know, Margarito standing in space, kind of staring and trying to box at Manny Pacquiao, he's like, he's done. You have to be that identity. You've got to go, like, be a wrecking ball with Manny. Treat him with no respect, and he won't know what to do. I've watched him spar. You know, sometimes he sits on the ropes and lets you hit his stomach. He's kind of controlling that moment. There are other times when I've seen him get to the ropes, and he's not in control, and they always kind of stop, and then they go out to, like, center. They treat him like a star. And if you treat him like just another guy, like a street kid from the Philippines, you slap him around a little bit and steal his donuts, I think you got a shot at beating him.
Yep, I'm picking him, and you know, I had that brave pick, man. I say Timothy Bradley is going to be able to stop him, and I'm going to stick to it. I know some folks are going to say you're crazy, man, but you know what? I'm gonna go with it. I think that Timothy. I know some guys are like, he doesn't have any power, Dave. What are you talking about? But you know, when a guy that is a lot bigger than the weight that he's fighting, when they restrict their body and they you know, cut this a certain amount of weight in their body, it does kind of tend for them not to have that same type of resistance and punches. So, and we've seen it happen. We've seen this happen with fighters. You know, we've seen, even though some fighters, first one that comes to my head, he was a big puncher at 147 with Tito Trinidad, but you saw the explosive even got even more. You know, there was more tremble to that punch when he moved up in weight. When we've seen guys, too, that when they decide to not cut that much weight, two things could happen. They either become normal or they just become more powerful and a bit more greater in that division. So I'm expecting a lot from Timothy Bradley, man. I'm banking a lot on the kid. But I think that he gets Manny Pacquiao at the right moment, the right time right now in their career.
Yeah, I think it's all aligned. I was looking at photos like and video all this week. Just like Manny just looks older to me.
Into that whole thing, too. You know, I'm not going to buy into the whole there's a trouble in the camp and all this other stuff. And, you know, even without the whole religion thing, man, I'm just not. Yeah, I'm not buying into it. I'm just not buying into that.
It is weird. It's like the default answer now. Well, if God wants me to do that, and I want to go see Floyd because God wants me to do that. And I'll tell you what, Manny, that's get real old with me real fast. Like, you know, I respect everybody's religion, you know, and their beliefs. And, you know, I've expressed mine. I'm not about, you know, being negative like that. But I'm kind of sick of hearing it. And I don't think Manny has all the signs of a guy with one leg out the door. He's had that for a long time. And remember when they said, like, Lennox Lewis drowned in Ocean 11? Eventually, all this has got to catch up. And also, Manny, this is his 60th fight. You know?
Somewhere
time catches
there,
up
man.
To everybody. Yeah.
Yep.
Manny hasn't dominated and blown anybody out in a long time. The guy that Floyd Mayweather wanted to take testing was the guy that he remembers probably most of all. Is the shotgun blast of Ricky Hatton's face in the second round that all of us thought killed him.
Right.
That's what Floyd and Floyd Sr., more importantly, saw up close. He absolutely obliterated his fighter, and he doesn't want that to happen to his son. I don't think that Manny Pacquiao exists anymore, to be perfectly honest. I could be wrong. If he just absolutely just stiff-boarded like Roberto Duran against Tommy Hearns, Tim Bradley, hey, more power to you.
Exactly.
We'll just shut the hell up. That's not going to happen. Mike Jones, 26-0 versus Randall Bailey, 42-7 for the IBF welterweight belt. Wonder where this storyline's going.
You know, we talk about young guys that are going after unactive fighters. This is another one with Mike Jones going after Randall Bailey. The only thing is Randall Bailey, he hasn't been active, but at the same time, he does carry that one-punch knockout power. But he's just not consistent with it. You know what I mean? I mean, he really – when we talk about a puncher that falls in love with their power, he is one of those guys. He really falls in love with his power. He doesn't do a whole lot to set that power up anymore or any – I don't even – honestly, not anymore. I can't remember if he really did. Where Mike Jones, to me, is in his peak. He's in his prime. The length, the size, it's going to be a lot of trouble for Randall.
Yeah. His power's pretty hot, though. I mean, a lot of people kind of fall in love with it, you know?
If they
walk into a club,
I'd
be like, that's pretty
right.
nice-looking power. But at the same time, you're right, the inactivity, the age, he's 37. He's not really a welter. He's more of a junior welter that's now a welter. But this is my intrigue in the fight for me is I know Mike is probably not been having the best time making weight the last, like, three camps, last three fights. Like, even Steve said that. He sees him working out at the hotel and, like, working, not, like, shaking out. So that power combined with weak legs or stamina issues and he gets tired late in the fight, I mean, Soto Carras kind of pressed him. It's, you know, Randall's not that kind of fighter. He's not, like, a physical press-you kind of guy. He's a stalker that's looking to land that gigantic right. But anything can happen, and it wouldn't surprise me. You know, it just wouldn't surprise me.
No, it wouldn't.
I'm still thinking Mike Jones.
You know what I'm going to say? It wouldn't surprise me because he does have that punch out. He does have that knockout power in that right hand that can really turn the table, not just once around, but three times around. You know, Mike Jones, to me, would have to fall asleep or really kind of, you know, veer away from the game plan to get caught with that. Because to me, the game plan would be use the jab, circle him, keep him turning so he doesn't plant his feet, Randall Bailey, so he can't throw that big right, you know. And then when he does get him up close, you smother him and you push him back. You show him, you know what, I'm the bigger guy, I'm the younger guy, you're the smaller guy, moving up in weight, thinking you could bully me around. And that should really honestly shut down Randall Bailey. And Mike Jones should possibly get a TKO over Bailey because it's happened in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an intriguing fight. I like that fight.
It is.
Underneath it is a fight that's not that intriguing. Jorge Arce, 66-2 versus Jesus Rojas, 18-1-1. I'm sure my microphone caught that. For the WBO bantamweight belt. This is, you know, Jesus Rojas, 18-1-1 is a sacrificial lamb. Although Arce is always in tough fights.
You know, I was going to say that. Always in tough fights, always in exciting fights, and you're going to definitely get a blood spill in this guy's fight. He's almost like a horror flick.
He's a
slasher flick.
Yeah,
you know?
He's just like Jason. He's just, it just starts bleeding. I think he's going to knock this poor kid out. Guillermo Lugano, WBA junior featherweight belt, 9-0 versus Tion Kennedy, 17-1-2. I think it's going to be a fun fight while it lasts, but I think that Guillermo is going to get him to the body and knock him out. It's going to be sudden, like around the 6th or the 7th.
I think so, too. I think it's going to be, a Guillermo start slow and then catch him with a big shot. And you're going to see it once again, and you're going to hear the complaints just roll on in. And with those complaints rolling on in, you're going to hear the name Nonito Donaire just being echoing, just echo through the whole arena and stuff. But you know what's going to be messed up is that if that's the fight before the Manny Pacquiao, Timothy Bradley, the morale of the whole crowd, if you're having a house party and you're hosting this fight, just be prepared that people are going to complain and they're going to fall asleep just for a bit until the knockout comes.
Yeah, he does that. I mean, he plays with the guy and kind of waits safe. You know, he waits till the coast is clear and then he comes in and just, you know, kills everybody. So we'll see. Guillermo, he's got to understand that he's got to be more exciting on TV. He just does, you know. And it's very weird what, you know, I'm not there in Vegas, so I imagine I would have had access to him. Over there, but, you know, it hasn't been easy. He's got to look spectacular. I think Tion Kennedy will make him look spectacular. But we'll see what happens. And then you got Wale Omotoso, 22-0, Lucky Boy. Damian Frias, 19-4-1. Lucky Boy's going to go some rounds. I haven't really seen much of Frias, so I'm not terribly sure. I don't think he's got a lot of power. But he's a very shifty guy. He's actually kind of fun to watch. He's got nice defense. If they stream this fight, like on Sky Sports or you know, not stream it, but televise it, and sometimes Top Rank does streams on their network, check out Wally. He's interesting. I'm not sure if he's exciting, but defensively, seeing him and Rigondeaux back-to-back is going to be pretty sweet. Michael Zuski, 14-0 versus John Grimaldo, 8-1. Zuski's another one to watch. This is, you know, a developmental fight. It's fighting a guy with only one loss as opposed to many. So he's going to have, you know, some resistance to him. It's going to be an interesting fight.
Right.
At the Gymnasio, Manuel Aguilar in Chihuahua, Mexico. Fernando Montiel, 47-4-2 versus Arturo Reyes, 11-1. You know, it is what it is. that for Arturo Reyes. Have some tequila standing by as well. Marco Antonio Rubio, 53-6-1 versus Jorge Cota, 12-0. Interesting fight. I wouldn't stand Cotto up too fast after he gets knocked out by Rubio.
Right.
And finally, at the Palacio de los Deportes in Maaguas, Puerto Rico, two of my favorite names in the sport of boxing, McJoe Arroyo, 10-0 versus Felipe Castaneda, 7-4-1, and McWilliams Arroyo, 11-1 versus Felipe Rivas, no relation to Felipe Castaneda, 12-11-1. What's with the mix with these guys, McJoe and McWilliams? I don't understand these names. Do you know the story with these names?
You broke up. What did you say?
What's the story with these guys' names?
I don't know.
McJoe and McWilliams. It's just weird. I don't know if you can hear the Mexican music, but it, like a festival is. Yeah. Because, you know, everybody likes this music. We all want to hear it.
Right.
Really loud.
You're biased. You're biased towards Mexicans, remember?
I am. I'm very biased. And that's your weekend fight schedule.
But there you go.
Press.
There you go. Here on Leave It in the Ring, you know, we try to provide as much information and truth here on Leave It in the Ring that we can. And I hope you guys enjoyed this segment. Before we leave out, I want to play something that Radio Raheem conducted in an interview, and it was quickly interrupted when there was drug testing questions involved in it. It's about a minute and 43. I did try to catch it, so I will kind of work in the lead of it, which is they were talking about Lamont Peterson fight being called off and how Lamont Peterson was asked was asking for Nevada testing, and before Amir Khan could answer the question, he was interrupted by his manager. So we'll play that really quick, and then we'll discuss that. We got like 15 more minutes here left on Leave the Ring. If you want to shine in on this conversation after we play this short bite here, the soundbite of Radio Raheem, credited to him for sitting down. And, hey, brother, get some water next time when you do an interview, man. Have a water guy next to you, man. What's wrong with you? You were dying in that interview. But Radio Raheem's a good guy, does great interviews, man. He's a pro, seasoned pro, and conducting interviews on Max Boxing. So let's play that really quick.
He's
here.
Really good.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yes. He's at the Victor Ortiz one that got Victor a hearing. So I'm sure they weren't that happy about that. But, yeah, he's a nice interviewer. I enjoy his work. So here we go.
I do, too. Yeah, here we go.
Well, you know, the fight was a close fight, and I mean, I believe I won. I'm sure Lamont Peterson probably believes he won the fight. There was a lot that went on in that fight that I wasn't happy about, and my team wasn't happy about, and my promotion team wasn't happy about. But, you know, overall, at the end, he got caught out, you know, taking something he should have been taking. It just makes it unfair, especially in a sport like boxing, because you're going in there to beat somebody up. Now, if you're going to be, you know, if taking enhancement performance drugs and stuff that are going to help your performance, then it's unfair, it's cheat. So, yeah, I believe, you know, he should be banned, and the title should be reinstated as champion again, and we move on from there. I'm going to leave it to the boxing commission, and I'm sure they know better, they know exactly what to do. But for a long, long time, there's never been a fighter that's been caught, you know, and Lamont Peterson was caught on a random test by Vada. It was done this time, couple of months ago, you know, about 2 months ago, right, I think it was at the, it was downtown somewhere, I think it was this building where he got caught, you know, it was randomly, nobody knew we were going to get tested, and that's the test that came out positive, so, you know, I'm happy in a way that the truth's come out. I'm also happy that boxing is cleaning up, the sport's getting cleaned up, because a couple of weeks later, after Lamont Peterson was caught out, Audrey Berto was another fighter who got caught also. So it shows that boxing needs to clean up, and there's a lot of sportsmen out there who are cheating.
Now, you being one of the premier fighters in the sport, you know, Lamont Peterson, ironically, is the one who insisted, is the one who insisted on the drug testing. So, hold on, dude, what are you doing? Hold
on. Now, that's when, Radio Raheem was trying to ask that question, and he was really interrupted by by Amir Khan's manager, and stepped in and put his cover his hand. Yeah, his PR manager. Oh, there you go. And put his hand out to cover the camera lens, and that's why you heard Radio Raheem say, "Dude, what are you doing?" I don't know. What's your thoughts, Gabriel, about that? I found that to be really strange. Obviously, there was something there that they didn't want to talk about. Or go ahead.
My thoughts are in the article. That link is in the article. And actually, the link is I'm going to send it out right now. And it's what I'll show in the article is kind of a disturbing pattern. Of suppressing information, in my opinion. What I witnessed at the Khan Garcia press conference was very strange. Only one employee, and I won't say who that person was, I don't want that person to have their livelihood jeopardized because they talked to me. They didn't tell me anything pertinent. and offered me breakfast, which was very nice of him. But what I watched at the press conference, I'll explain it in the article. The article explains everything kind of up to date where we are. There's still cards I'm not playing. There's tons of cards I'm not playing. For people that are always kind of assuming that they know what my next step is or what my sources are or what I know or what I don't know, you haven't been listening to me for 2 years, two-plus years, and then all of a sudden I started breaking things. And now all of a sudden everybody's an expert on what I know. I mean, not to brag or toot my own horn, but I was 2.5 years ahead of you. What makes you think you're ahead of me now or even caught up? I think people should just wait for the next story, let me do my job, which I'm doing as thoroughly and as quickly as I can. Get out of my way, help me out, write about it, support it, because it's about the fighters and fighter safety. It's what I was talking about tonight. Yeah, I want Peter Quillen to risk himself more often. I'd love that he gets paid a lot of money. I think every fighter should. But don't talk to me about brand and business. You fight like you haven't bought for 7 months. You know? But ultimately, it is about fighter safety, and it's about what's good for the fighters. You know? Why I was so rude to Peter was because I extended a helping hand to him to try to clarify what was going on with him. And instead, he pretty much just told me to F off. Over an interview that we did on this radio show that I went on record and said I was not happy about. I didn't like the way it went. I didn't like the way it went tonight. You know, don't insult me and try to tell me how you think you know how I've lived my life. You don't know me. And I'm just judging you on your work. I'm not, you know. And I'm judging you on the fact that you declined to be interviewed with me and then went and said bad things about me on another website. That I
Right.
So, in any case, it was a little bit of a rant, but, you know, just let me do my work. Leave me alone. Stop threatening me. Stop sending me, you know, legal threats. And just release the contract. I think it ultimately comes down to that simple question. Everybody's asking, did you know? Why are you asking me? The first person to put that in print, the only person, besides Scoop Malinowski and Pedro Fernandez, erroneously, and then finally me today with my article, the first person to put Floyd Mayweather tested positive 3 times and used exemption or provision rather in the same sentence, in the same letter. That was Golden Boy's lawyer, not me. So ask them, where'd you hear the rumor? Why are you asking this guy? Why do you think you know what he knows? And why don't you release all the test results, all the memos, all the emails, everything pertaining to all 3 fights in which they did USADA testing? Release all that to the public and release all the contracts. If I'm wrong, then I'll write it.
There you go. Here on Leaving the Ring, 3 hours of boxing talk. You know, jabs and stabs at the boxing fools here on Leaving the Ring. Anyways, hey, man, it's always fun. I hope everybody enjoyed our segment here on Leaving the Ring. Be sure to tune in every Thursday night. Pick up your Undisputed Fight magazine. Like I said, you pick up a May issue, you get the next one for free. It's me, your host, Dave Duenas, and my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. We'll talk to you, everybody, soon on Thursday night, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. Be sure to catch the Boxing Fix on Sunday nights and Noche de Boxeo on Monday night here on Leaving the Ring.
Dave, as always, great show, good times, and I'll see you at the fights. Peace.
There you go. Don't drink and drive, people.